people, the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeFlantis right here on 720 WGN. Let me tell you about what's coming up on the program today.
Right.
I know you're interested. I got a pair of Blackhawks tickets. They're taking on the Sabres on Sunday, November 17th. That would be Sunday. That is Sunday. Did I say what day that was?
Is that already November
17th? Yeah, Saturday, right?
This Saturday.
Huh. Oh, she's a funny one. Anyway, yeah, no, Sunday. We got tickets for Sunday's game. And those Sunday night games are so much fun. They are rocking. And thank God, and last night, they lit the lamp. They just kept lighting the lamp. It was 4-1 at the end of the first period.
Love it.
Right? How much fun was that?
And there was a fight within the first 30 seconds. Taves was involved.
Yes.
I know.
Thank God.
Unusual.
Thank God. We'll talk about that a little bit later on the program. So I'm feeling much better about my beloved Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm. Feeling good.
Still not out of the, they're not out of the hospital yet, but you know what? They're showing some improvement.
Totally.
They're off the critical list. So that's all good. Then I should say that we will be discussing our Bears. Now, I believe they are still in intensive care. I don't want to take this moment of look at this. Look, oh God, you know, they look so good. Oh, that Mitchell Trubisky. Look, he actually scored. He actually threw three touchdowns yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Eddie Pinheiro did his best Cody Parkey impression.
Oh.
Still got away with it. They still got away with it. But the point is that there was a sign of they're off the ventilator.
They limped across the finish line.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the you know, you got a parent or you know a relative or somebody who's you know near death. This is kind of where this is how I'm equating it with.
So you don't see it as a turning point?
Not yet. But we'll figure that out because I believe we're going to be we got some people who are going to help us with that coming up in the program. If not, it's the four of us can figure it out because for God's sake, we're all nuts about this. I do want to find out what happened with Danny Trevathan. Is there no announcement yet?
No, nothing.
Kevin,
yet.
It did seem unspeakable when you saw it, but then he was standing on the sidelines. You know, when he came over the sidelines, he was just standing there, and they were looking at his elbow, and he didn't seem to be wincing in pain, which tells me he's the toughest guy in the history of humanity. Because quite honestly, if that were me, I would have run through the tunnel all the way down the lakefront to Northwestern before I would have stopped running.
Watching the video was brutal.
It was
hard to watch.
Ooh,
So there's that also coming up on the program. It is Veterans Day, and we have a very, very, very cool guest coming our way. We've got Bravehearts. That organization, we talked to them a couple months ago now. They do therapeutic writing and educational services for returning veterans. Mm-hmm. And it is what they do it throughout the country, but they've got a facility here up in right on the Illinois-Wisconsin border. It is so cool what they do.
Yeah, they're riding horses, and they talk about the healing powers of the program they had. We actually had a veteran in a couple months ago when we were introduced to this, and it was just remarkable the results they're seeing with veterans who return home or are home dealing with all kinds of things from PTSD on down, and just really, really a wonderful program.
So join us for that. That's coming your way in the 5 o'clock hour, right? That's been moved to the 5 o'clock hour? I believe I'm looking at the producers.
According to my schedule here.
Yeah, well, don't look at the schedule.
No?
Schedule sideways.
Schedule is not to be looked at, right, not to be counted on.
Something happened in all this. Oh. A.B. Stoddard's going to get us ready for the week ahead on Capitol Hill. They're off today, thank God. Everybody's doing the right thing today because everybody's talking about veterans and they're mm-hmm. talking about the impact of what the government really can do when they're doing things right. So that's good. So we have a day to reflect on things that are okay. Moving into the week, God knows what's going to happen. Oh, and Rick DeMille is going to join us because he's an aviation meteorologist.
We'll talk to him about both things today. There's certainly news in aviation with what happened at O'Hare and that plane. It's getting off the runway, but then, wow, the weather.
Yes. And that's coming your way as
slightly
well.
Eventful.
With Demetrius Ivory this hour. So we have all of that. So yeah, we're just chock full of things. So stay with us. It starts here at 3. It ends at 7. You have to be here for the entire time, right? Isn't that how we do that?
Still in your seat.
Rules are rules.
People.
You don't want Roe to yell at you, okay?
No. I don't want to yell at you. You don't want that. I don't want to yell at myself. All right. That is all coming your way. But like I said, don't forget that I got Blackhawks tickets. That's the most important thing. Against a really fun Eastern Conference rival, the Buffalo Sabres. It's always fun to see them, and Patrick Kane always likes to beat up on them because he's from Buffalo. So we'll do all that. But first, let's check the traffic and the weather with Lauren Lapkin.
Went to a trampoline park Saturday night.
Ooh.
Oh, yep. Ben Bradley.
Brought the kids.
Wow. You,
went over
you
there.
Remember when your Saturday nights were so much more fun? and potentially more sanitary.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, you got to buy those socks because they have to have the grips on. So
yes.
Most people have new socks on, which is
the orange
helpful.
Socks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine how many of those little orange dirty socks they find at the bottom of the trampoline every week?
Oh. Or in the ball pool. Is there a ball pool at the
no
place you went to?
No more ball pits. No, I think Chuck E. Cheese ruined the world on ball pits.
They have like those big foam cutouts pits. So they're like, big blocks, but they're foam.
Uh-huh.
And you see a bunch of kids look like they're drowning in there holding their hands out like, please, help me. I can't get out.
Until some guy like Rower Eye thinks it's going to be funny to jump in. Hey, look at me.
That's the thing. The heavier you are, the harder
it is.
There's
a 4-year-old underneath there.
No.
You know how difficult parenting is. It's the most difficult thing you'll ever do in your life and the most rewarding in a lot of ways, right?
Yes.
But I will say that I never spent a night or day at Chuck E. Cheese without a beer in my hand. Mm. I never did. I always had to chase her around her and the kids, you know, her friends, whatever, around with I learned how to balance a beer or sometimes even a glass, even the cheap wine.
Really?
I just figured it would go faster.
Did they serve that in like the cup with the rat on it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. I was looking at
that
plastic
you also
cup.
Hold your tokens in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly right. I knew that. That was what you know. And I kept
so
telling
to get through it.
Tell the rat to get out of my way as I'm moving around. And my head was on a swivel constantly.
Oh,
at the
course.
Chuck E. Cheese because you're looking, you know, for poop in the ball pit and then predators.
Yeah.
That's the two things you got to look for.
I think my lowest point of parenthood was when we lived in the city and we were in the midst of like an 8-day stretch of sub-zero weather, and we just had to get our two boys are 11 months apart and they were like 1 and 2 at the time. We're like, we got to get them out of the house. What are we going to do? You know, they're up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday, and we took them over to a McDonald's play place that smelt like a mixture of dirty diaper and the deep fryer.
And
I just I remember thinking, if this kid ever doubts my love 20 years from now, I will bring this up. I will bring this moment up as a germaphobe.
Yeah,
all
you
of too,
it.
Huh?
Yeah,
you and Roe.
Oh my God.
How'd you ever survive going to Chuck E. Cheese?
That's why Ben and
How
I.
How did you make it?
Ben and I are close friends because we have the exact same interests.
Oh yes,
it's
actually
hobbies.
The foundation of our friendship. That and gastrointestinal distress.
Yeah, well, that's part of our hobbies.
Yeah.
It's one of our hobbies.
Do you wear rubber gloves at dinner together as you pass the salt back and forth to each other? clean the top of it with like a little swab.
Yeah.
Our hobbies are finding a clean enough bathrooms in case there's an emergency.
Yes.
And also panicking about being sick.
Yes.
We have all of that. That's about it, though. And Ron Majors is our mutual friend. Those are the only things that really bring us all together.
Yeah, really, Ron is kind of the sane one in the group.
Oh,
when
God,
we go out for dinner, it's essentially Ron just talking the two of us off a ledge.
That's
you know, and Ron
when
does
happened.
It from such a point of calmness now that he's retired. It's maddening, isn't it, bro?
Terrible.
He's like, oh, yeah, it'll all work out. Look at me. I had this long, great career. And Ro and I are like, oh, my God, we still have 20 more years. And then Ro brings up some horse that Ron went partners with him on 10 years ago.
All right. Anyway, what's coming up? Obviously, the weather.
We're covering the weather in depth. I know you're talking with Demetrius about that in just a minute. We're also covering this kind of interesting thing that's been playing out, I think it kind of feels like in slow motion over the last several weeks at the State House in Springfield. Because, you know, you've got the situation where State Rep. Luis Arroyo was kind of forced to resign after he was charged with attempting to bribe a state senator. And it's been interesting to watch how Mike Madigan, the powerful House Speaker, not only pushed for Arroyo to resign, but now today is out with a statement pushing Arroyo to not be able to use his position as a Democratic committeeman.
Pardon me, Ben. Yeah. My panic meter is going off right now. Hold on. I think I'm okay now. Go ahead.
because Mike Madigan is on the forefront.
No, no,
of
I just heard this beeping, and I just figured that must be what it is.
Oh, okay. I thought your panic meter was.
I keep going.
Yeah, no, so it's interesting because Madigan is perhaps necessitated by current events having to come out and push for Arroyo to not be involved in naming his successor. He's out with a new statement today claiming that he shouldn't be. Meanwhile, on the other side of the state capitol, over on the Senate side, you've got a state senator, Tom Cullerton, who has been charged with embezzlement, pled not guilty, but he's still in office. John Cullerton, the Senate president, yes, they're related, has
far,
not,
far, not... Not close relation, though.
No, but yeah. Has not pushed for him to be out, despite the fact the charge is that he was a ghost payroller for the Teamsters while he was the head of the Illinois Senate's Labor Committee.
Hey, Ben.
Is that frowned upon?
What are you doing?
That's what you hear down there right now.
Yeah, you hear a lot of that right now.
Why are you talking about that like it's bad?
Hey.
All right.
So it's just interesting, okay. I think it's a sign of where Madigan is being finds himself.
Well, I find two things interesting about what you just said.
Yeah.
Is that these guys, they want to have it as business as usual, regardless of everything that has just happened, regardless of the handcuffs, regardless of the butcher paper on the windows, mm-hmm. regardless of the fact that it is so clear to everybody who is watching, unless you are in denial, that the federal government, that the Justice Department, through the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office here, are lining these guys up like ducks in a shooting gallery. And what they have to do is still cling on to... Are they that stupid? Did we elect people who are so incredibly incapable of logical, rational thought that they don't get that you can't do business as usual? If you are about to be indicted, you can't have anything to do with what... Or, you know, have been indicted, whatever the case may be in this. There's a pantheon of them. You should not be involved in trying to choose your successor or cast votes that will eventually be called into question if they're close votes, although there's nothing in Springfield that is anymore.
But it's interesting because you don't hear Mike Madigan calling for Ed Burke, despite the charges against him, to give up his post as a powerful committeeman. So it tells you...
But these guys got to stop. I'm sorry. You know what? This is I appreciate... A guy at United Airlines stepped down because he was having a consensual relationship.
I think it was McDonald's.
I'm sorry, McDonald's.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, United.
Sorry,
keep
United.
Flying the friendly skies.
It's a rough day for them. They don't need that.
Yes. Thank you. I'm sorry.
They don't need that.
Thinking about United for something else. All right, so the McDonald's
when you
guy.
Think, when
right?
You,
the
when
McDonald's
you think consensual
guy.
Affair, think Hamburglar and Grimace. Not,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you knew they were always getting it, huh? But that's the thing, that this is, that. I mean, that's in the corporate world. I mean, and perhaps some of this is a little overcooked, pardon me, because McDonald's kind of is. It's a little overcooked in the corporate world, but it's the exact opposite of the public world, and I think it's a reaction to it, because in the public world, they go, hey, what? I can do whatever I want. I'm king of the fill-in-the-blank, you know, whatever it is.
But that has been true for them for decades. For decades.
But these are not, we put these people there, and I think that's part of the problem. Is that we're the only ones responsible, and if we don't care or we just like the fact that, you know, our bully's better than their bully, then it's okay. And none of that is
But
okay.
Remind us how often we've seen Speaker Meg Madigan stand up for ethics and reforms and gone
that's
after
a,
people of, in
point.
His own party to try to step up in the ethics game.
And,
I don't recall too
and
many
And we've
instances.
Now seen him have to do something that has been out of character a couple of times here. Remember when the whole sexual harassment allegations were hitting very close in his office, and he was kind of forced to respond to that. And he's not a guy who typically finds himself in a position of being forced to do anything. And that's where he is now.
Exactly the problem. Exactly the problem. I mean, that's that. These guys don't ever feel forced because they've been doing it their way this entire time, which is why we should absolutely have, and I'm not talking about extraordinary term limits. I'm not talking about our extreme term limits like two cycles or whatever, because you definitely have to have leadership and you need continuity of government and control and all of that sort of stuff. But you should have leadership term limits, right? Only after a certain amount of time, and then you can't be leader no more,
right?
As we like to say in Illinois.
You can't be leader no more.
Right.
Yeah, that should
Got
be
it.
Written in the rule book.
Yeah,
you
we should have that.
You can't be leader no more.
It's not. Cause
it's very understandable.
Right. And, I mean, if you want to be there for 50 years, whatever. I mean, I don't, you know, knock yourself out. But if you but you can't run the place for 50 years. Although the idea here is like of a Madigan, if you term limit him out of management, if you will, you know, everybody'd still be running to his office.
Well, I was going to say, and not to create a comparison between Vladimir Putin and Michael Madigan, but
it's a good one, though.
Term limits force Putin to, quote unquote, step aside, step into a lesser role for a period.
Yes, for a very short period of time.
And he put his guy in, and then now he came back and changed the rules.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
I am not leaving now. Me and the Chinese guy are going to stay forever.
Pass me an apple.
Maybe Donald would be a good idea for you to stay forever, too. Pass along. It's okay. Okay. All right. Anything else?
We'll
Is there something
today.
Lighter happening?
We are previewing our... Demetrius and I went to space camp.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Oh, God.
We're going to preview that today at 4, and then look for that tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday on the WGN News at 4. And
it
I think when you have Demetrius on to talk about the weather in a minute, just ask him how that space camp trip worked out for him.
I'm not. I don't care.
I'm going to. Why not? I'm excited about that.
I saw on social media the pictures of you and Demetrius at space camp.
Yes.
And it looked like an outtake from Stranger Things. Is what it looked like to me.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
That is.
I'm telling you,
it was not a... It was like, oh, my God, these are two grown men.
Right.
Well, it was great. Our boss, Jen Lyons, heard us talking about how Demetrius is obviously a big NASA nerd, and I went to space camp as a kid, but gastrointestinal difficulties forced me to come home early. And no
Imagine
kidding.
Imagine that on the space mission.
Yeah,
see, that takes you right out of the astronaut corps, man.
And our boss is
no
like,
chance.
Well, you two should go back, live out your childhood dream. Let us know how that works out. Well, you'll see this week at 4.
Can only imagine.
A lot of training involved there, and not as easy as it looks is all I'll say.
Some goofing off happened.
Commander Nelson, pass me that baggie again. They still have baggies. I don't think they even have those anymore.
Oh, you mean the puke bags?
Yeah, they do. Don't they have the
No, they do,
plastic
but they charge
thing?
Extra. Yeah, that's in addition to the baggage fee, you got to pay for the vomit bag.
Yeah. Or just
only on Spirit, though.
Or just down your undershirt. Either way, however you
exactly.
got to do it. Thank you, Ben. We'll see you on the WGN TV News at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10. Right now, Kim Gordon's got the news. All right, let's go back to the WGN TV newsroom. Demetrius Ivory is joining us right now. Ben wanted us to talk about sports camp or the space camp with you, but we're not going to do that.
No.
Because we'll wait for the series to come out, and then we
Can't
are going
wait.
To make fun of you mercilessly.
Yeah, well, let me just say, don't travel with Ben. I mean,
I already know that.
I
already know that. Right. All right, let's talk about what happened here. What had happened was it snowed and it snowed and it snowed, and now I could see it already happening. Things are locking into place.
Yeah,
ice is forming.
It's like a typical January day, right?
Yep.
So record snow for us earlier today. O'Hare got 3.4 inches of snow. Yeah, that's not much at all, but that is a record. The previous record was 1.9, which was set back in 1995. Record for Midway also, that's 2.5. Again, not much snow, but it is a record. So far for this season, we're up to about 8.1 inches of snow. And how about this? This is the second snowiest start to the season on record. The only other time that we saw more was 1951. So it's been.
And how was that winter in 1951? Do we know?
I don't know. It was a great year.
You remember it well.
I remember licking the light post and having my tongue stick to it, and I went at a radio flyer. I'm just trying to remember other things I did in 1951.
Well, I can't imagine.
So it goes from snow, Demetrius, now to this really bitter cold. You just heard Kim talk about how the wind chill's at 7.
Right, the wind chill's at 7 now. Now, later tonight, we're going to be looking at wind chills between -5 and 0. So, you know, the warm side would be 0. We'll see a low temperature tonight down to about 10. The record low is 8. The record for today actually is 15. So if we drop to that before midnight, more bragging rights there. That record goes down, and then tomorrow morning, I think we're okay. I don't think we're going to fall to 8 degrees, but wind chills are going to be at the bus stop between -5 and 5. And even during the day, they're probably only going to climb into the teens, as tomorrow's high temperature is only going to be about 21 degrees. So typical high would be 50. But we're only going to get to 21. That's another record that goes down.
I miss 50. 50 was nice.
How dare they do this to me?
But the thing is, once we finally get a 50-degree day, which may happen this upcoming weekend, we're going to love it.
It's going to feel great.
Yeah.
Do you know, is it Saturday or Sunday?
It looks like Sunday right now. The temperatures do warm into the upper 40s right now, maybe 50. So we'll take it. Friday and Saturday, mid-30s.
But
35.
It'll take that long for the snow to melt?
I think the snow's going to stick around probably till Wednesday night, Thursday. Then temperatures finally climb above freezing.
So can I ask you, are we in a snowpack situation now where there is it going to lock in north and west of us in terms of snow on the ground, which will make this a colder season if that doesn't melt?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I do think in the short term that's what it's going to do. That snowpack across portions of the northern plains into southern Canada, yeah, that's going to keep those temperatures down. But, you know, last year we got 14 inches of snow in the month of November and then nothing in December, 1.7. So, you know, you kind of can't go by... You can't go by what we've seen so far and say that's going to carry us out for the rest of the winter. I can tell you for the next 2 weeks, though, Arctic.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's, oh, boy.
Even despite the fact we're going to get a 50 on Sunday, the next 2 weeks are not going to be good.
No, either way, we're going to be colder than normal. This month so far is 9.5 degrees colder than normal. So we're not going to make up that distance. We may warm up a little bit over the next couple of over the next few weeks or so, but we're going to end out way, way colder than normal. We haven't had a warmer than normal day since mid-October, actually.
I like when people, a moment like this, because I have relatives, and at Thanksgiving I'm going to be hearing this, yeah, see, I told you global warming was a hoax.
You should check my email box.
Yeah, you already have that.
I know. That's all that they're doing. I would like to invite those people to realize that that's all part of this. That's the whole idea.
Yeah, the globe is actually a globe. It's one whole globe.
Yeah,
so you can't measure in your front yard and expect that to, you know, really count for the globe.
I told you, though. That's what it's going to be. And then they do that thing where they just kind of wave you off. You know, like they do. They just wave their hand at you over the mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me anymore.
Whenever there's a story that comes out about, you know, like last October being the warmest on record, you should see the response. I mean, it's unfortunate that it's politicized so much.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem. Everything is. Thank the cranberry sauce is politicized. Right now, it's like it's not red enough for some people, and it's too blue for others.
Let's argue over something else.
Right. Like, shut up.
Yeah.
That's just, you know what? Today, this is a perfect day for this. Veterans Day. It's a day where we can stop and just look at honoring people who have sacrificed their career, you know, part of their careers and their lives, and they've given part of their life for the military, right?
Yeah.
This is not Memorial Day. This is not celebrating the fallen. This is celebrating the people who actually go and do those jobs. And let's do that. You know, those both days are very, very important. They're for different reasons, but they're both important. Demetrius, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, Demetrius Ivory, WGN-TV Weather. Let's check the traffic and the weather with Lauren Lapka. Oh, man.
We won.
Yeah.
Yay, go Bears. Victory Monday.
Yeah, that's what's happening right here. And Adam Hogue is joining us, and Kevin Powell has thoughts, and I've got thoughts, Anna's got thoughts, Lauren Lapka's got thoughts. Kim Gordon's not allowed to discuss this with us. All right.
She's a Packer fan.
Yeah. Let's
and we
just,
won. Just let me say, I won't say another word.
Oh, yeah,
that
you
was
won.
A fun game.
You won barely. Wow.
Win's a win, Ro. You should know that by now.
Today, we're going to count that.
I have to say that the reason Demetrius Ivory was just now, we're talking about whether or not this winter weather is going to stay here because you're going to get a snowpack up north.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I asked that question is because I saw that Green Bay game, and it was snowing like a mother.
Wasn't it beautiful?
Up at Lambeau. I mean, it was crazy. It was so much. It was like a snow globe. It was very fun. And it was a last minute kind of a, you know, almost went the other way, but it didn't. And this is actually good for the Bears. And that's what I want to talk to Adam Hogue about immediately here, which is how crazy am I? Wait, that's not the question yet. How crazy am I to think I went through, I called up a buddy this morning and I went through all of the permutations of how the Bears could make the playoffs. Who has to win? Who has to lose? Turns out that Green Bay game, that Green Bay win, was good for us yesterday, and what we needed to have, we need Minnesota to fall back to earth, and we need Dallas is probably going to win the East, right? And so we just need some suckage on some of these other teams, and we need to win at least, I would say, at least five more games, probably six.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the only way you're guaranteed to get in is if you win out. and you finish 11-5. Because I do think this is going to be one of those years, guys, where 10-6, you're probably going to need to win a tiebreaker there. So that goes back to what you were talking about. It's probably good that the Panthers lost if you're talking about a wild card
spot.
And let's not forget, you know, in 2012, the Bears finished 10-6, and they didn't get in the playoffs, and they fired Lovie Smith. So
they're going to build a statue to in Springfield, Illinois now because of what he has done for the University of Illinois in Champaign. Because he's, they're going to put him right next to Abraham Lincoln.
Like
in the courthouse square there.
Beards right next to each other. I'd like that.
That's true. That's true. But, now all of a sudden, you know what I was thinking about? I was watching, you know, there's like Lovey Madness down in Urbana, right? Champaign Urbana. That it's so, I started to think, well, if Nagy doesn't work out, I wonder if Lovey would go back. You know, that's happened before where the coaches have come back. I don't know.
You know, looking at the remaining schedule for the Bears, Adam, as you know, this is why predictions in the preseason are always, they're fun, but they don't really carry a ton of weight because the season evolves. I mean, the Rams don't look all that good. I mean, it's a winnable game Sunday for sure. That's a 5-4 Rams team that didn't look good against the Steelers. They turned the ball over 4 times. Jared Goff doesn't look all that great. And then you got a 2-win Giants team, and then you're back at the Lions. These are 3 very winnable games for the Bears.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of Lovie Smith, he used to always break the season down in quarters. And that's what I think is the best way to go because you're right, and that things change so quickly. Just ask the Lions. I mean, we didn't even know that Matthew Stafford was going to be out. Until really, it didn't start coming out until Saturday. So, and actually, right now, I know the Lions are being investigated a little bit for how they handle that, their injury report this week, because I don't think the Bears are very happy with
they
the
hit
misinformation.
That.
Yeah. But, you know, to your point, if you just look at it like these next few games coming up, if you can find a way to win in L.A., which I agree is a winnable football game, then you got the Giants. And then that's followed by the Lions again, who might not have Matt Stafford. And if you're, again, this is all if, but if you're able to win all those games, you're now on a 4-game winning streak, and things look a lot different than when the Cowboys come to town, and they're obviously good, but they're coming to Soldier Field. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're talking about a game at Lambeau Field after that, that'll matter a ton, and guess who could potentially come back at Lambeau Field? Akeem Hicks, who the Bears sorely miss right now. So if you just look at it like the next 4 games, they could potentially get back in the conversation. So it's not that crazy, Ro, that you're breaking down the permutations of how to get to the playoffs.
I got it all worked out. I need the Panthers to fall apart. I got all kinds of things here, Hogue. All kinds of decisions that I went through, these permutations. It was funny. We were, you know, taking out the scratch pad and making decisions. It's like, I should have been on the NFL Network at that morning show this morning with like a whiteboard and making everybody nuts.
You mentioned Akeem Hicks, and obviously he's been out with that left elbow. He and Danny Trevathan are probably the two most vocal guys in that locker room. And Hicks has been out, now Trevathan with that elbow. You know, we were all kind of laughing in a weird way in the press box because they go, Danny Trevathan, elbow, questionable return. And we were like, what do you mean questionable? His elbow just went 10 different directions. But do we know any more details on where he stands with the left elbow injury?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's good. Matt Nagy wouldn't confirm that he's going to have to go on injured reserve, but he did say that's something that they're looking at right now. And usually when a coach says that's a possibility, it usually is. I mean, I think the big question is, did he fracture anything in there, or was it just a dislocation? And if it's a dislocation, he may be able to play through it in like a month or two, but then we're talking about a return right around when the playoffs would start.
Okay, two things. As I'm the only medically trained person on this program, I always like to point that out.
You're a fake doctor.
That the way that that may be an injury that looked, especially given the camera angle that we had, that may have looked worse than it actually is. Because if it is just a dislocation, because he came off, and either Danny Trevathan is the absolute toughest human being ever, which he may be. I mean, he really is an amazing athlete, right? He did not have the look of a guy who, you know, if that thing dislocated and there was fractures and all kinds of other things, that immediately they would have rushed him. They would have taken him to the hospital because he may need pins and stuff like that. I have a feeling when they looked at that X-ray, and I I think he doesn't make IR. I think he's back in 4 weeks. That's my personal prediction.
So to your point, Ro, if that's the case and it was a dislocation with no fracture, Akeem Hicks theoretically could have returned in 4 or 5 weeks. But remember, he's also been dealing with a leg issue too. So I think that's why they made the decision to put Akeem Hicks on injured reserve and take him out for 8 full weeks. Let him be, you know, closer to fully healthy when he's able to return potentially in that Packers game in December. Danny Trevathan's situation is a lot different because he didn't have any other injuries. So if it was just that, like, kind of 4 to 5 week type deal, then they could keep him on the active roster. And he'd only miss about a month or so and could potentially return later. So that's why it's still kind of it's up in the air.
How crazy are we? I start again. How crazy? All of a sudden, their hope is alive. Like what I said last week, if they had just won that game, they would have been 4-4, and everybody would be like, hey, look at this. We're back. And now they're 4-5, even though they really should be 6-3 is really what they should be. Maybe even 7-2, according to OB. OB will be joining us, by the way. Ed Obradovich will be here coming up next hour. Don't miss this.
Hey, do we see Adam Shaheen suit up another game? Healthy scratch yesterday. The guy's been nothing but a bust since they drafted him.
Yeah, I mean, it would take Ben Broniker not catching diving touchdowns because, like, if
he looked good yesterday.
Well, that's what I mean. If you look at the game yesterday and you evaluate that, I forgot. Trey Burton did leave the game with a calf injury. So if Trey Burton can't play next week, that would probably put Adam Shaheen back on the, in the situation addressed.
Absolutely. But when they had made the announcement watching the game, or I wasn't even looking up at the screen, and I heard Broniker with the catch in the end zone. I thought, oh God, it was intercepted. I had no idea who the guy was. Who? That was pretty great.
Yeah, there's no way Adam Shaheen, a lot of people thought, could he make the catch? Adam Shaheen couldn't run that route. You know, he wouldn't have beaten that defensive back off the line of scrimmage and out of his break like he did. So, hey, it's a move that paid off for the Bears, but they got to get more production from the tight end. So if it's Ben Broniker, fine.
All right, and they're handing the ball off a lot, and you know, just that is better. But here's one thing we also need to realize. I'd like to talk to Coach Nagy. Actually, when you see him, I know I tell you to tell him things. Tell him this. Tell him I sent this message to him that Tariq Cohen's too small to run up the middle. Just tell him that and see how he reacts, and then run as far away as you can possibly get. Thank you very much, Adam Hogue.
You got it, guys.
Have a good one. We got news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2. Love Lewis Black. All right. Thank you for the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, Kim. I appreciate that. Oh, coming up, I should mention that we've got OB. We were talking about the Bears just a few minutes ago. OB will be here right after 4:45, and he has thoughts.
He definitely does. If you listen to the post game, Hampton OB with Kaz, I always enjoy it. It was interesting to see. Of course, they were very critical of the Bears. You might not have known they won the game based on listening to it, but they pointed out really important things moving forward, you know, what this team has to do.
Right. Well, Lauren was on that CLTV show. What do they call that show?
Sports Feed.
Sports Feed last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to catch a bit of that because she's one of our people. Whenever our people are out doing things, they got to be seen.
Good.
And you made an excellent point that win was basically like when you explain it again. It's like when your mom brings home the wrong cereal.
Yeah, when you say you want like Cocoa Puffs or Fruit Loops, and your mom brings home the generic brand, you're like, okay, like you got it. But yeah, I'm not that enjoying feeling. It. Yeah, it's
sure.
Not as good.
Yeah,
I get that entirely. That's a good way to put it. I couldn't find words for how that win felt, so I just that analogy felt the most fitting. Yeah, your stomach isn't satisfied, and yet you got the cereal supposedly you wanted. Right. You know, or opening a gift that you received and you don't really like it, but it is like an everyday necessity you could use. You're like, thanks. And you're trying to put on a pretty face. Putting on a pretty face. I think that's a good way to say. Explain what the Bears did.
I got you these socks for our anniversary. I hope you like them because I know your feet are always cold.
Just what I always wanted.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. That's good. All right. Well, that's coming up. OB will be joining us also coming up this hour. We're going to be joined by A.B. Stoddard in just a few minutes. She'll tell us about what's... There's a very busy week ahead, what you should anticipate here, because it's going to turn into... well, it's going to be crazy time. The news headlines coming out of Washington are going to be nuts because these public hearings are going to start, and the there's going to be an action and a reaction. And is Hunter Biden going to be called up? They now, you know, remember that Hunter Biden was one of the ideas they wanted. The Republicans wanted to bring up a whistleblower and Hunter Biden, and in response, on Democrats were like, "Well, let's bring up Ivanka Trump." And it's like now it's getting far and wide. It's getting even crazier.
Oh. Boy, I mean, the fact that it's televised leading into an election year, you can just imagine the craziness that will ensue.
I just want to tell you that this is going to make my Thanksgiving a nightmare.
It's not helping.
And I don't think I'm alone when I say that. This, I think your Thanksgiving is going to be a nightmare. Yep. All of our Thanksgivings are going to be a nightmare.
Do you have a good way of sort of steering conversation away from politics? Because I find that even though it starts out with the best of intentions, somehow it does always steer in that direction. Something gets made, even a snide remark that sort of launches off, you know, directed to the other person of a different political belief, and boom, you're off to the races.
Just bring an air horn, and anytime it happens, just,
good idea! Hey, thank you. The air horn. I'm writing that down, putting it in my phone.
You know what helps? You know what helps these situations? Alcohol always makes for a calm, rational conversations. It won't be interrupting. Listen, I mean, this is years ago. Before any of this wackiness happened politically, before we either are wearing Team CNN or Team Fox News or Team Trump or Team whatever. Even before that, I had a Thanksgiving turn into a fist fight. Between two of the grandparent level.
Fist fight.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I had to get in the way of it. I had to pick up the phone and say, I'm calling 911 right now. So one of you two or both are going to jail.
And the substance or what started
I
that?
I can't even remember. Can't even
See?
Recall.
Sure, it was very important.
No, I
would have started doing play-by-play. I would have encouraged it.
You like the drama.
Grandpa Joe hammers him with a right.
You said your shirt is stupid.
Grandpa Frank counters with a left.
Grandma's coming in to try to break it up. No, no.
From the top ropes, Grandma.
Actually, I think Grandma
use
was...
Use the chair.
As I recall...
Jerry.
I believe it was actually Grandma who started the fight, too. That was the best part.
Oh.
Drop a grenade and walk away and let the grandpas duke it out.
Right. That's what she tried to do.
That'll happen.
Yeah.
Classic maneuver on Thanksgiving.
Yep. And the next thing you know, she just caused that. It was, you know, my mom has an ability to do that. She just could, like, you know, that's punch bowl, turd thing right there. It's just, boom.
I like to do that. I'm the instigator. Drop that. How about Trump and Russia these days, huh? And then I'll just walk out.
I'm going to get the butter. I'll be right back. Oh, we forgot the rolls. Hang on. I know. There's that person in every family who does that.
It was exactly. And then the next thing I was like, "Grandpa, no, Grandpa, hey, Grandpa, stop! Help! Yeah, wait a second." And old guys, you don't want, you know, they can't take the physical abuse. It's just not possible. All right. Also coming up in just a few minutes, I got Blackhawks tickets. Buffalo Sabres take on the Blackhawks on Sunday night at the United Center, and I want to send you there. Thanks to our friends at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. Tune in every Monday for your chance to rip us up for tickets. Thanks to Four Seasons. Here's Lauren Lapko with the traffic and the weather. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. A.B. Stoddard joins us right now from RealClearPolitics.com, and she's our friend, and she tries to calm me every time she's on this program, and yet it doesn't really work like that now,
never.
Does it?
No. Ever.
No.
Really never, ever.
No.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. All right, so there is a week. I would like to, let's take a little time here to explain to folks who have bigger lives and more things going on, and they don't have a lot of time to spend worrying about what's happening in Washington. Let's explain to everybody who's in that boat what is going to be happening here over the next 4 days in D.C.
Right. Well, the calls from Republicans and the president for transparency have been answered because the official open public hearings are beginning.
They should not be as much of a circus as usual hearings because, like in the questioning of then-Judge Kavanaugh, it will be conducted by, you know, a staff attorney. So it's not going to be the usual political zoo, although it could get that way at the end, but not as much time will be spent on people grandstanding. Nonetheless, Republicans, if the testimony is compelling, will call them show trials after they asked for them. And we're basically going to be listening to three people who've already given depositions. They have corroborated the whistleblower's initial account, like the other witnesses all have. And Bill Taylor, Ambassador Yovanovitch, and George Kent, all Ukraine diplomats at the highest level in our government, will be talking about this sort of, you know, rogue foreign policy that was conducted by Rudy Giuliani around the world, an unaccountable private citizen at the direction of the president, and we'll be talking about why this, you know, this whole process of the aid being withheld. And what we've learned is it's not just a phone call on July 25th. There was a whole set up. It took months. Rudy Giuliani's been at this since last winter or earlier by some accounts. And then there was lots of kind of covering up of this. So it's going to be interesting to see if they go beyond what we learned from the depositions, but I think most Americans didn't read their transcripts from the depositions. I doubt that most Americans will be tuning in to these hearings, but if testimony is compelling, you know, those news accounts will be replayed and people will eventually absorb it into the bloodstream. And so we'll see where this goes. I think we've had many conversations about this where I've said that, you know, the whole ball game is John Bolton, the former national security advisor. He really needs to testify, and I think that the Democrats really need to wait out the court process. We know that it's being expedited, but we don't know how long it'll take. But I don't know how they can really break
through.
Will
not be this week, though.
No.
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 All right. Well, a couple of different things. This is going to, again, ruin all of our Thanksgivings. Thank you. Especially if Bolton testifies before Thanksgiving. It's really going to be something. I think you're right. Most people are not going to do that. Let me just jump to the end here quickly before we deal with a couple of the other things in the middle. At the end, there will be a sense, based at least on the depositions and the testimonies that have been already given. Let's just assume that what's going to be determined here is that the president, through Rudy Giuliani and through some of his other people who were working for him, did want to, there was a quid pro quo. There was a, hey, listen, you got to do this before I give you the money. It seems to me, as I was watching the morning shows yesterday, that the new line of defense here is, yeah, all of that happened, of course, because the president was just trying to root out corruption in Ukraine. That's just what goes on. And so that he was doing his best. And all right, it might be to investigate a guy who was the child of his political opponent. Fine. But that's just the kind of thing that happens in politics. Who cares? He was trying to do the right thing, ultimately, because he's trying to keep the economy going and he's trying to keep America strong. And that's just what he does. And that's, I think, where Republicans are going to come down on this and say, go ahead. So sue us. Take us to court. That's what happened.
Oh, yeah. I think it's been clear since before yesterday morning that they've landed, as more and more was revealed, on, okay, so what? And you know, this sort of the crude version was the Mulvaney press conference version, which was get over it. But it was, you know, it was painful to watch Congressman Mac Thornberry, retiring Republican from Texas, former chairman of the Armed Services Committee, try to say several times, this is inappropriate, but then explain that it's just sort of going to happen because the president has, in essence, said this kind of thing before many times in public, like he commits these crimes when he walks, so I don't know, it's all okay. It's going to be it's impeachable because it is an abuse of power. It is attempted bribery when you are using your position, your official capacity and power to extort something from someone from your personal gain outside of your official business. And if you look at just bribery at the level, you know, of the president of the United States, it's an abuse. It's a violation of his oath to the Constitution. So he's going to get impeached in the House. that's the end of this. It's all where it ends up in the Senate, and we've talked about this before. He's not going to be removed from office. He's not going to be convicted by 20 Republican senators joining with all the Democrats. I do think, though, that there's the potential for a bipartisan vote, because I know Republicans know that this is an abuse of power and a violation of his oath of office, and is, by many people's estimation, attempted bribery, which is in the Constitution. So it's just going to be a very tough searching of their souls. You're right. The Republican line is, it was inappropriate, but it's not impeachable, which President Trump does not like, because yesterday he was tweeting at them saying, don't fall into the trap, the call was perfect. Don't say it's not impeachable, but it's improper. It's all wonderful. So he always makes it as painful as possible for them,
yeah.
And they're all running around taking Tums. But
got it.
That's where they've gotten themselves.
Can I ask you about Nikki Haley, her interview? She has the new memoir out, and she sat down with Norah O'Donnell on CBS News, and she made a pretty interesting admission, startling to some of us, about how former cabinet members Rex Tillerson and John Kelly had asked her, tried to recruit her in a way to take sides against the president and undermining him, and that it was the best thing for the country, and that she resisted it. I think it's interesting she came out publicly to talk about that. And what do you make of that choice? She does remain loyal to the president, it seems, although she has been very critical of a lot of things he said, such as about immigration as the daughter of immigrants and other things that he has said. She doesn't seem to agree with him on everything, but here she seemed to come out and make this admission to everybody.
Yeah, so Nikki Haley is a very smooth operator. For those of us who have followed her closely, she's very shrewd and very deft, but she's not subtle. she has been in the past, but she's close with Ivanka and Jared. This is an absolute wrap your arms around the president in hopes that that there's a path for her to the president. She's definitely a presidential candidate in the future. That's what she's doing all this for. And that's what she's doing to position herself as someone who can absorb as much Trump support among his voters later on as she can hold on to, while she says things like, I'm a Russia hawk, and I'm the child of immigrants, and whatever about his policies or rhetoric. So she's trying to thread that needle. But what's interesting, I don't think it was six-dimensional chess that she was actually trying to reveal to us, that at the highest level, she's joining with the anonymous author to tell us that Trump is dangerous and people around him at the highest level think so, like Rex Tillerson, the former Secretary of State, and General John Kelly, the former Chief of Staff. But that's what she's telling us. And then she's telling us she's offended by it. But what she's also revealing is that people have had to stop the president time and time again from doing things that are illegal or reckless or counter to our national security interests and our security. So,
well, that's where the John Kelly quote a couple weeks ago came from, where John Kelly was it was characterized that he had basically said, listen, I told the president that you got to get, don't get a yes man as your chief of staff, because you're going to end up in trouble. Right?
Right.
And so that, and then the president said, nobody, he never said that to me, and that's not true. And but it is, because ultimately John Kelly may have kept the president by saying no to him. And is that as far as that goes, you know, conspiring to say no to the president because the president's going down the wrong path? I mean, isn't that what the cabinet's about, theoretically?
I just think that we can sit here and have a circular conversation about how people like General John Kelly are raised in the military. They've taken oath to the Constitution, but they are raised and trained and dedicated to a chain of command, that the president's the commander in chief, and they're not allowed to do anything that he doesn't want. But they're actually, they're putting the country first. And early on in the administration, General Kelly had to stop the president from yanking our troops out of South Korea. I mean, this is early on. And these are things that are necessary. And so this has been a different presidency where the normal rules don't apply, like resign and stand on your principled high horse, or stay there and execute his wishes and his agenda, because people are trying to do what's best for the country. And they genuinely believe, I mean, look how long Gary Cohn, his former national security, national economic advisor, held off the tariffs. a really long time, the entire Republican, you know, free trade contingency that's left of the conference in the Senate and the House was you know, working this behind the scenes, and Gary Cohn was instrumental at the right hand of the president, and then he quit ultimately over tariffs. But this, it's very difficult to say this is a normal situation, and people
right.
like John Kelly are doing the wrong thing, because I think they're doing the right thing.
All right, AB, very quickly, I got 10 seconds left here. Do you think John Bolton will end up testifying? Because it seems like he wants to testify, but he needs to go through this legal channel first.
I guess it's all up to Judge Leon. I do think, as I said, I just don't know how the judge will rule, but I think the Democrats have to wait out the third branch, okay. make it a part of this process, and I sure hope we hear from John Bolton.
AB, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
AB's at RealClearPolitics.com, right there. You heard what you had. That's as concise as we can make this poop storm that's about to hit us for the next 4 days. Right now, let's get ready for the news with Kim Gordon, and then on the other side, OB is going to be joining us.
Now, folks, we've got to go out and play the Los Angeles Rams. Here come the teams. Here come the teams. And this was a giant win for the Bears today. So kudos to the Bear organization, to Trubisky. But I'll tell you what, to play a team that did not have a quarterback and to play a team that ranked 31st in total defense, and they took us down to the last second to win the game.
That's OB. From yesterday. And don't you worry about a thing. OB will be joining us coming up in about a little less than 10 minutes to pound something. I'm not quite sure what, but it'll be something. Because you listen to it. You listen to the Hamp OB with Kaz show yesterday. It was
so
not,
good.
It was not a celebratory moment.
No, not a celebratory mood at all.
Mm-mm. No. But let me do this right now. Speaking of sports, I've got tickets to go see the Hawks take on the Sabres next Sunday night, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. And tune in every Monday for your chance all season long to win a pair of Blackhawks tickets from our friends at Four Seasons. That's a 6 o'clock start. Is that right, Kev? Is that still a 6 o'clock start?
That sounds right, Ro.
Okay, they did not move that. You know what I also like on Sunday? You get this a little bit as you get more into the winter. I like that there's like a late morning, early afternoon start that they do on a Sunday, too. So they're like, it's like a noon start. I can't remember. It's noon or 1 or whatever. And it's like that. Then you got the day. It's sort of football's out of the way, and you got the day to yourself, and it just started. There's something very refreshing about going to the United Center and see the ice reflect up at you, almost like sunlight when you're already sunlight deprived in the middle of the winter.
Pretend sunlight.
It may actually be the reason I love hockey so much is to be in the stadium and to feel that light off of the ice.
There's something to that, to be under those big kind of stadium type lighting in the winter when we're not getting much.
Nope.
Light in any form.
It just feels, even though it's, you know, it's basically a snowstorm on the ice, it just feels better.
Speaking of which, Ben Bradley, you know him, over at WGN-TV.
Hold on, did I say caller number 19-312-981-7200 rips us off? Go ahead.
Has just tweeted out that in this cold, and if you've been outside, it is cold, certainly cold for this time in November. It's snowy and icy and all the rest of this. We've been talking about wind chills going down to zero. Two people spotted by SkyCam 9 attempting to surf on Lake Michigan. They're out there in the water at 57th and Lakeshore Drive surfing
Let's shred some gnar, bro. Wicked waves out there.
People are surfing.
Okay, now there was a guy a couple years ago who tried this, who I believe lives in North Streeterville. The mean streets of North Streeterville from whence I came.
Mm-hmm.
That was my neighborhood growing up. That out of one of those high-rise buildings, came down the elevator with a surfboard and walked over to Oak Street Beach. He was subsequently arrested by the police for doing that.
For surfing?
Yes, because he was taken into custody because it was a violation of... Because he kind of got stuck out there and they had to go get him. And it's like, it should be. I know, generally, you're going to pay the ultimate penalty for being a moron by going out in this kind of a thing. But... if you are a surfer dude, I must point out that this is as perfect a circumstances you can have. Sure, the air is cold, but the water is warmer. And the waves are unbelievable. I was driving up Lakeshore Drive today. They're coming over that right at that corner at Oak Street, what would be Oak Street, right before you get to the beach. You make that first turn, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were coming up over that breakwall because you're already about a quarter of a mile out into the lake at that point away from the beach. Not quite. Maybe, I don't know what that would be, but somewhere around there.
There's video of them. They're actually surfing out there. They've got the wetsuit on. They look awfully happy.
Yeah. That is, and they're idiots. Oh, sure. There's no question about that. These are not people that I pray to God that, you know, something bad happens. You go to the emergency room and the doctor says, hey, hold on. I got to change. I just was surfing. You don't want to hear that from your doctor. You want to call your lawyer and have them say, Mr. Fabiz is not here because he is surfing. You don't want any of that. But yet, that's where we stand.
773, they surf all winter, reminding us in Lake Michigan with the newer wetsuits. Insulate them somehow, and they're not cold.
Those look like some serious waves.
Yeah, they do. And I just wonder, growing up in the Midwest, how do you get to be that good at surfing? Right. How does that happen?
This guy that got arrested was from the West Coast.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they miss the wave.
It's a way of life, bro. Just shred a gnar.
Surf or die.
Well, or both.
Maybe at the same time you can die surfing.
Yeah, I guess if you wish to do that, that's what it seems like to me. This is not right. And you know, Chicago cops, this is not like Baywatch, right? This is not Hasselhoff and other people running out to go get a guy who's, you know, fallen over on a surfboard. Chicago cops who got to pull out in their boat and go get you.
They'll throw you like a rope or something.
Yeah.
Hang on.
That's right. And we're going to drag you back in. That is not what these guys are. You're not going to get the same reception from them.
Get the bleep out of the water.
Right. I should say cops and firefighters because they're both out there, right? Because you got
that too.
And then they get the call. Imagine they get the call. Like, what the? Oh, come on. Oh, God. Because some of those guys got to go in and risk their lives for some doof who decided the best thing he was going to do all day on one of the coldest, wackiest, it's still early November. I don't even want to say it's mid-November. Is it mid-November yet?
Feeling like January.
I don't even want to say it. It's like it's as bad as it gets, and to know that we are now looking right down the barrel of six more months. We have November, December, January, February, March. That's five. And you know how we get how bad April can be around here.
We do.
That's 6 months of this. Now, from this point forward, I'm already in a bad mood, and then there's some guy who's surfing. What are you, crazy? Lauren Lapko, what's happening? Here we have with us our dear friend, our colleague, former Chicago Bear legend, who got quoted in the Tribune yesterday. I should point this out.
Saw that.
Tribune ran a piece about the top 10 greatest moments in Bears history. And number one, of course, was the 85-86 Chicago Bears victory. That's got Dan Hampton in it, right? That Dan Hampton, one of the most prominent defensive players in the NFL from that era. So winning the Super Bowl with Dan Hampton. And then number two was the 1963 World Championship team that Ed Obradovich was in. And Ed Obradovich is quoted in a little piece in the Tribune. And I think the term, we knocked the crap out of them, is actually, that the sentence, we knocked the crap out of them, is actually in your quote. Am I right about that, Ed Obradovich?
You're close. You're close. It was a great team. And, you know, when you can put everything together in a year, and of course the reason why you play the game is to be a world champion, and you make it happen, and those guys on that team, they were terrific. Boy, there was just one thing that they were looking at, to be world champs, and it is different, bro. And Anna and Kevin, it is different. The thought process is different. How you go to practice every day, your meetings are, everything is different. Believe me, because I played on some terrible teams, and like, you know, they say, like, you know, well, there's a fine line between winning and losing. That's not true in the world of football. It's like from here to China and back 10 times.
That's true. Losing is losing. It's not like you're, it's not like baseball where, yeah, you're going to lose again. That's all right. You got another 161 to worry about.
No.
This is a very, this is 16 games. That's it. It is all on the line in every single game. Okay. Let's talk about what we saw yesterday. I gotta steal Lauren Lapka's analogy here, which I really do like. It's like when your mom brings the wrong cereal home. It's like you got the generic version of a win. Fine, it's a win, but does it really mean anything?
Well, yesterday it was, you know, you're glad. You know, it was nice to see Trubisky actually try to put, you know, more than a couple passes back to back and actually hit one of his targets, and that we haven't seen since this kid has been here. And you know, we've got what, 7 more games to go, and we're going to start to play some pretty decent teams. You know, there's some soft ones in there, the Giants, etc., but this game isn't going to be easy going out into the West Coast and playing the Rams. They lost yesterday, and I'll tell you what, they'll be waiting for the Bears. But I just don't understand Nagy. I don't understand his philosophy. Dan Hampton and I, we sit in that boardroom. We watch that. I tell you, it's mystifying, the plays that he calls and the words that he uses. I don't see us winning a Super Bowl here. And if we do, I said, right after they drafted Mitch Trubisky, we will never win a Super Bowl with him. Never. And it's very simple, and it's right in front of everybody's eyes. It's not a mystery. And what they're going to do these last 7 games, I don't know. I wish them all the luck in the world. I'd love to see Trubisky, you know, really light it up. I'd love to see the offensive line start blocking somebody. And I'd love to see our defense, after play's over, they're all looking at each other now. You know, when Akeem Hicks went out of there, Ro, I'll tell you what, there's like 7 major categories that I think are important. Where I'll tell you, we were in some pretty good spots when Akeem Hicks was here. And as soon as he went out, my God, like just one for instance, is like against the run, when Akeem Hicks was in there, we were giving up like 61 yards. Since he's been out, we're giving up 125 yards.
There you go. That's all you need to know.
OB, bad news, Danny Trevathan goes down with that gruesome-looking left elbow injury. Still don't know how long he's going to be out, but not looking good. The one bright spot was Nick Kwiatkowski stepping in yesterday and having himself a game. What'd you see from 44? 9 tackles and an interception.
Boy, how about that kid? You know, when you get your chance, you got to step up, you know, and make it happen. And boy, did he ever. That was really great. That was nice to see what he did. He came in. He was in position and right on that interception, and he did one heck of a job. That kid's a competitor. And as far as Trevathan goes, he was having one good, fine year. I hated to see that kid go down. And that looked like an ugly injury, and I hope it's not all as serious as I think it is.
Yeah.
But he's really been playing good football. And Kwiatkowski, when he came in, he did a great job. He really did.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did. Man. Well, let me ask you back to the defense again, Ed OB. Tell me what you saw there, because I heard you guys and I listen to you after the Bears game every time, and I find it extremely enjoyable, and I love what you guys do. But it was interesting to hear you guys talk about the defense here season to season. You talked about Khalil Mack not being the superhuman we saw last season. I think at one point you even did mathematics and broke down his salary per game.
Right.
And you talked about how ridiculously threatening they were last season, and that we're not seeing that same thing this season. Not that they're responsible for where the Bears are. Obviously, the offense has a number of flaws that have been pointed out on numerous occasions. But talk about this defense, what you're seeing there.
Well, you're spot on. And I'll tell you, you know, that's when I mentioned, like last year or the year before, when I tried to make it very clear to people and to these players, listen, what you did last year, that's last year. We had phenomenal things happen. I mean, with calls from the referees, from the bounce of the ball, and then we get into the playoffs, we're at home. that you seize that moment. My God, it doesn't come along year after year after year. It doesn't happen that way. People get hurt. People get traded. Coaches get fired, and things happen. So when it's in front of you, and that's the point I was trying to make, we realized it in 63. The Great Bears of 85, they realized it. Did you see them go out there when those guys played? They just took care of business. These kids now are not taking care of business. They're not getting the bounce of the ball. The ball is not being tipped and flying into their hands, and the guy's running 70 yards for a touchdown. Those things aren't happening anymore. Guys are getting hurt. Real good football players are getting hurt. So the point being, my God, when you have that opportunity, it's so short. So short in the world of the National Football League. Mm-hmm. You've got to take care of it, and you've got to get the job done. And I just Akeem Hicks is such a huge part of this. I know everybody loves Khalil Mack. And the kid, yes, he is a damn good football player. Yes, he is. But I'll tell you what, how good is he now? And I said last year with Dan Hampton, and Dan was saying how good he thought Khalil Mack was, and I was saying I thought how good Akeem Hicks was. And because why? Because Akeem Hicks, on a constant basis, crushes the middle of the line and takes everybody back. And what does that do? That gives the quarterback very few options to do. If there's good coverage, there's not many places he go. Usually they'll step up and try to throw the ball, or they'll step out and break underneath the two tackles. With Akeem Hicks in there, you cannot do that. He's got the guard and center. He takes them all the way back to the quarterback. So when you're a defensive end or an outside rush man on this team, it's a pretty good place to be, because I tell you, Akeem Hicks, make no mistake about this. He is the man on that defensive team, not Khalil Mack.
I will say, back to the offense, something in watching the broadcast, we're going to have to leave it here, OB, but Dan Fouts was doing the color commentary, right? Dan Fouts was a pretty great quarterback back in his day in San Diego.
Yes, he was.
Right? Eric Coryell, that whole thing.
Right.
Dan Fouts, on more than one occasion, said, there he goes, throwing off the back foot again, talking about Trubisky.
Right.
It appears that the guys who are, you know, who played the position in the NFL look at Trubisky and go, this guy does not have the basic skills that are needed to be a great quarterback in the NFL.
Well, I'll tell you what. Dan Hampton, he's been saying that for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, you sit there and you watch him, you get tired of seeing it. You know, why isn't that corrected?
I don't know. We'll leave it there now. But that's exactly the issue. Why the hell is that not corrected? I don't know.
That's right. You got a head coach, you got an offensive coordinator, you got a quarterback's coach, you got quality control people.
Yeah.
You mean to tell me in the last 2 years, the kid has been here 3 years? You know, and there comes a time in point here, Ro, when enough is enough.
That's right.
I'm dead serious on that. It's enough excuses about covering for this kid, Nagy, enough of his game plans. We game plan to gain a yard, a foot. If it's third down and eight, and what is he
going
to throw a two yard out pass in the flat? Hope the guy breaks the tackle.
I got your heart monitor. I got
your
heart.
You know it. People listen on the show. They know it. They see it.
Right.
I don't understand our offensive philosophy, and I don't understand Mitch Trubisky, because boy, does he have a long, long way to go in such a short, short season.
Thank you, OB. We got to run. Thank you.
Pardon?
Appreciate it. We got to run.
Bye, OB.
I love you. Goodbye. We got the news coming up here in 2 minutes from Northwestern Medicine News. All right. It is time now for the most important moment of the day.
It is.
Is it not?
Very special time of day. Look at the clock. It
no.
is just after 5.
And that tells us mm-hmm. that it's...
It's the top 5 on the Rokan Show.
5.
Let's go.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. Checking in at
number 5.
It was terrifying. There's a video that posted very early this morning to Twitter, and then all the TV stations picked it up, of a passenger recording the landing of a plane at O'Hare. Now, this is that's kind of a weird sort of situation here, because
frightening, I suppose, if you're a passenger.
But do you record the landings? I was wondering about this. Should you be doing that?
Just all the time to see, just in case. I mean, I don't. What was the signal?
I bet you they were probably doing it for Instagram, and they were going to put like wheels down at O'Hare or something like that.
Yeah,
everything's Instagram now.
Coming in from South Carolina, wherever they were, and yeah, maybe they saw hello, Chicago,
snowing.
Right. OMG, look at the snow.
So you don't think they expected to get it? Although they interviewed passengers, several news stations, and they said this was our second attempt at landing, that the pilot kind of told them they did a first pass and that the conditions didn't look good.
Well, that'll pull your phone out.
Get it out.
Yeah, let's do it. Just in case, we got to sue so we can see what's going on.
Well, let me call my family and tell them I love
them. Get Mike Monaco on the phone.
That's true. Let's go call my family. I don't know. I'm going to just sneak this phone call. I'm going to text. I'm going to turn my Wi-Fi on anyway. I'm just going to, don't worry about it. I'm fine. I guess what we're going to do. I'm going to turn my phone off.
Love you, Mom.
All right. I don't know why
they're all okay. That's why we're allowed to.
Yes, exactly. So this was an Envoy Air flight from Greensboro, North Carolina. 38 passengers, 3 crew members. Plane then slides off the runway. And in the video, the flight is seen coming in. Seemed okay. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, an abrupt left turn. We landed that one.
How many people do you think peed their pants in that moment?
I feel like
didn't you feel it? Even just listening to it, not even being there, was
the clenching.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your captain for the flight deck. I just want to say that welcome to Chicago. Where the local time is 9:08 a.m.
I was going to say, where's the time and temperature? Everything's fine. Don't worry. Carry on.
Well, it slid off, and then it went off the runway, and then thudded, into the grass below. That was the moment. Here's what it sounded like on air traffic control.
329 runway 10 left is now closed. Let's see, down runway 10 left.
That's it.
That's it. Does he know how calm they are? That's the thing. It doesn't matter, because the thing has slid off the runway. Play that. You got that. Keep that back up. That it's just basically she's saying, well, the runway's closed now. Nothing's here. Move along.
29 runway 10 left is now closed. Let's see, down runway 10 left.
I wonder what Rokan would sound like if he was in the traffic control.
Oh my god!
Traffic control. Let him know we've got a problem here.
Oh my god! Did you see what just happened? Oh god! Oh my humanity! Oh my god! I gotta go.
Yeah.
It would have been something a little bit more like that.
Look out! Brace yourselves.
Yeah. Well, I just want to go back to the if you'd already done a go around.
Mm-hmm.
The first time?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm assuming the crash position on the next attempt. I'm not pulling out my phone and sticking it out the window and doing all that. And everything is fine. And all the other planes were able to land and make it, those that came in. This guy, whatever was happening. And again, this is a commuter jet, right? This is one of those small.
Yeah, it was like less than 40 passengers.
Right, 38 passengers. 38. And so you got, just kind of sitting there. I do like the idea, though, that now the the worst part of this for the passengers is they got to now get out of the plane through some sort of exit situation.
Hope they have their snow boots on.
And then they have to get out, and then they got to get in the bus. And they're coming from North Carolina, right? Yeah. So they probably are wearing flip-flops, for God's sake. And they have to get in the bus and take the little bus over to the commuter thing. And then a lot of those passengers are going to be getting on a bigger jet going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're getting on a jet, and right after you just crashed in the first jet. I don't know. I got a feeling about that.
Happy they're okay.
Yeah. All right. We're going to get to your 4 and your 3 and your 2 and your 1 somehow. Scooby-Doo works his way in to the top 5 and 5 today. We'll explain all that. But first, let's get a look at the weather and the traffic from Lauren Lapka. All right, top 5 at 5 continues. We are up to
number 4.
Falling snow. Governor Pritzker and Mayor Lori Lightfoot and other dignitaries remembered the sacrifices of the nation's veterans. The governor called Veterans Day a very special day as about 150 guests, many of them veterans, huddled in the cold at Soldier Field.
It's my personal mission to restore and improve veteran services that were diminished under the prior administration. It's our sacred obligation to deliver on the promises our servicemen and women have earned. Our veterans risked their lives to serve us, so we must serve them.
I will say this, that I appreciate what he's saying there and the need for it. And I know he's got a lot of military. He's got an amazing origin story.
Naval officers in his family.
A lot of people in his family who are in the military. And I appreciate that. I just, at a moment, even the president didn't get political today. I mean, of all the people that get political, you know, there's no reason to mention your pride, you know, the people that were there before you, or we're going to restore things. You know, it's just you're making a commitment, and you're increasing the commitment from what was already there.
Because it's not like Governor Rauner hated veterans or anything. I mean, it wasn't, you know, this isn't a political thing. We should take care of our veterans.
Right.
Absolutely true.
Lori Lightfoot spoke of the veterans who came from different backgrounds.
The city of Chicago, like the United States itself, is a vast place, made up of people from every imaginable background and personal story. The men and women we honor on Veterans Day were raised across different generations, grew up in different neighborhoods, served in different places, and fought in different battles. But they all answered the same incredible call of service and sacrifice to our nation. We stand in awe of their courage, and we will never forget they gave for us to be here today.
Now, you may wonder what that is that you're hearing in the background there. Those are
wind?
The heaters that they put in to keep the people warm.
Because this was an outdoor ceremony.
Yes.
At Soldier Field, right? Outside Soldier Field.
All right. Checking in at
number three.
All right. So the Bears, they got a victory.
They did.
Right? We haven't been saying that in a long time. Like 6 weeks, right? The 29th of September.
September.
Was the last time.
42 days.
Don't you remember the 29th night of September? I think that was that song.
Mm-hmm.
So, this was Matt Nagy in Club Dub after the game.
This is right here what it's all about. Right there. That 5 minutes right there. You know why? Because we stuck together. Was it perfect out there? Absolutely not. But you know why? Because of the character that we have, we stick to the very end with 7 seconds to go. We win that game. Go back to practice. When I see you guys out there practicing as hard as you do, and I see the ones that are out there taking that extra step, every single rep, it matters to them. Because you can't get us. You got me? And then this happens. Credit to every one of you guys. Credit to the coaches. Credit to us. Right? That's what it's all about. Damn, it feels good.
Damn, it feels good. Yeah. My God, I'm not going to get fired this Monday, is what he's saying. And I like what he said, that those 5 minutes out there, that's about the amount of time they had of good offense. So I think it was very nice of him to acknowledge
it's
that.
It's got to feel good, though. I mean, think about it. Like, 4 straight losses. Those press conferences afterwards, interviewing the players, were brutal. You just saw, like, all the life and energy and positivity sucked out of their beings. That felt good. I hope it's a turning point. I know that we don't see enough in place here to really believe yet, but felt good. Felt good.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't feel good about it.
I felt milk. I don't even, again, I don't know how to explain that feeling. You're like, you want to cheer, you should cheer, but you can't.
Because you don't believe in the substance of it. Because
you didn't see anything positive. Like, I don't know how that performance gets you a win against anybody else right now.
Yeah, it's still a lot of question marks remain with this team, obviously. A quarterback, the offense was inconsistent the whole time, but it gives you some hope and the season's not over. If they lose that game, the season's over. We're going to sit through 7 more games of atrocious football, but at least there's some interest now. There's a sliver of hope.
Yeah, there is a sliver. And
I'm feeling it.
We did the math in the 3 o'clock hour, which is, if you weren't here in the 3 o'clock hour, you should always be here for the 3 o'clock hour because you never know what's going to happen. But we did the math, and there is a pathway to... they control their own destiny here. They would have to win out.
You couldn't even say the word yourself, Ro.
I'm trying. Just go with me on this.
There
is a pathway to the playoffs here. I know they're saying that in Cleveland right
playoffs.
Now, too.
I don't know. I don't
know. Oh, all right.
Congratulations, Bears, on a win.
Yeah. I did like that. 5 minutes. Those 5 minutes right there. And, you know, the thing is, that you had a rookie quarterback, you had a replacement rookie quarterback, right, that was in the game. And obviously he was very well prepared for this game because he played really well for the first half, at least. Kind of fell apart a little bit when the Bears adjusted to him. And then, you know, that last play of the game was an interesting one. There was a shot that they were going to tie the game or win it with a two-point conversion at the end, and I knew they were going to go for the two-point if they had gotten it. But he stepped over the line, you know, after he did that. But again, sort of a rookie mistake. Mm-hmm. But again, it's like Matt Dickler. What was the guy's name?
I don't know. The Kev?
Lions quarterback? Jeff Driscoll?
Jeff Driscoll, right.
Close, Ro. Really close.
And there was a kid from school named Matt Dickler. And imagine.
Always remember him.
Yeah, imagine the things we said about him. All right, here we go. And
number two.
Dooby dooby doo. Where are you? We got some work to do now.
Did you ever wonder how Shaggy and Scooby first met?
No.
No.
Exactly.
I did not.
Exactly. But apparently there is an origin story. The trailer for Tony Cervone's feature version of Scooby-Doo is out. And how is it possible that the talking dog found his way to this band of hippies?
Hey! This mangy stray's coming with me.
He's not a stray.
Okay, then. What's his name?
His name's Scooby.
Middle name?
Doobie?
Last name?
Do.
I'm Fred. This is Velma.
Hi.
And that's Daphne.
Hey.
I'm Shaggy.
And this is Scooby-Doo.
Nice to meet you.
Maybe this can lead us to Scooby and Shaggy.
Trace amounts of mustache oil, 12-year-old scotch.
Ugh. Is the bad guy my dad?
This is to introduce Scooby to the younger generation. The young Scooby.
Oh.
Young Shaggy.
Oh, I don't know. Well, by now, Scooby and Shay, first of all, we'd be, you know, Scooby was a Great Dane, so Scooby would have not made it out of the 1960s. Let's just put it that way. But Shaggy, if Shaggy were alive today, if Shaggy were a real guy and alive today, mm-hmm. Shaggy would basically be at a Trump rally, right? He'd be in that back row of those guys.
He'd
be about 68, 70 years old,
mm-hmm.
you know? Well, a lot of people who were in who were hippies in the 60s and 70s are now, you know, totally. They get older and they get on the Social Security and they get angry about things. I get it, and their hip hurts. And I think that's where we'd see Shaggy. My guess is that Fred by now.
What's Fred doing?
Fred would be, I think Fred would be involved in a long term relationship that just went legal.
Velma's campaigning for Elizabeth Warren.
Yes.
No question.
Right. And what's the other one? That's the...
Who are we forgetting?
Daphne.
Daphne.
And Daphne would be... you know what? Daphne would be in her sixth marriage by now.
See, I could see her being a cougar.
Yeah.
She's dating somebody like 25, 30 years younger.
And on The Real Housewives of Daphneville or wherever she lives.
That would be a talk about the mysteries that they used to solve.
So they should do it for the older generation. Mm-hmm.
She'd be like Suzanne Summers talking about how she has sex 14 times a day with her older husband. That is kind of where I see these people now. Is this a movie that needed to be made? I don't know.
I asked my 7-year-old if she knew what Scooby-Doo was yesterday because we were going through the apps. She didn't know. So I think this is like they suddenly start. It gets on their radar when they see the little kid version.
This is a feature film link. Is this
going to
be in the it's going to be. Is this going to be in the theaters or is this going to be like a Netflix thing? Because, you know, listen, they don't want to put the Martin Scorsese movie in a theater. Why would they put this in a theater? Put this directly on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or something. All right. Here we go. And finally.
Number one.
John Oliver last night, last week, tonight takes on lawsuits. He explained that lawsuits are on his mind because of a coal tycoon suit Bob Murray had previously filed against him was now dropped against the show, actually, against because they didn't like the way that coal was being treated on Last Week Tonight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So back in 2017, Murray sued the show over a segment in which Oliver joked that he looked like a geriatric Dr. Evil. Oliver concluded that segment with a musical number joined by a man playing piano. Oliver made his feelings known throughout the song, and here's a little bit of how it went.
Hey, Bob! Watch this!
He went to the Louvre and spit in Mona Lisa's face.
He bludgeoned Nancy Kerrigan and watched her cry for fun. He murdered Archduke Ferdinand and started World War I.
That's right, if we discuss Bob Murray in a way no reasonable person could construe as factual, we can say whatever the f*** we like. So come on, everyone, let's head to the streets!
Bob Murray? Is that the guy who dipped his b*** in my hot dog water?
That's exactly who I'm talking about.
Can I bring my car?
It's not ideal.
It'll be fine if I leave it here, right?
I don't know!
Wait, there's one more.
We went to court against the world's worst sport and learned important lessons on the way. We spoke with perfect candor and got accused of slander, 'cause Bob Murray wants to make us pay. So even though he'll threaten legal Armageddon, we have just one tiny thing to say. Bob Murray can go f*** himself today.
Well, he's a gracious winner. That worked out. All right. Say, when are the comedians and the coal executives going to finally get along? It's been, this has been a 100-year simmering war. All right, let's close this thing up, shall we? And then we got weather coming here. We got Rick DeMille's going to get us all caught up on what's coming up for the next couple of days. You're not going to like it.
The top five at five.
All right. Let me tell you what's coming up on the program.
Mm-hmm.
In about 30 minutes, we're going to be talking to Megan Hill McQueenie. She is the president of Bravehearts Therapeutic Writing and Educational Center in Harvard. And that is one of... We talked to these folks a couple of months ago.
Yeah, it's incredible, the work they do.
One of the most emotional stories you're going to hear. I was so surprised by what actually happens. This is for veterans. This is for people who've come back from very, very stressful situations, PTSD, all the things that, you know, one imagines after being through combat. And they had found no other way through the VA system to handle what they were going through. And this is sort of a diversion therapy by working with horses. And the stories are amazing. And these relationships between these veterans and these horses are absolutely amazing. You're going to hear that story coming your way in about 30 minutes. So stay tuned for that. And speaking of veterans, I'm working this around.
Okay.
Speaking of the military, you know, one of the branches of the military is the United States Marine Corps. Actually, it's in the Department of the Navy, or they don't call it that anymore, but the Navy. It's part of that. Don't worry. I got a Marine. I'm making him real mad by saying that right now. Who's looking at me? You know, you're part of the Navy. The Marine Corps Reserves have a program called Toys for Tots. And over the last 22 years, we have on this very radio program, we have collected more than 100,000 toys for Toys for Tots.
That's amazing.
And
it really is.
We are going to continue to collect them. And we have a big Christmas holiday / Kwanzaa party, if you want to come to it.
Whatever you celebrate.
Yep. We've got
toys for kids.
That's all we're interested in, are the toys. It's called Carnarvel Express. It's going to be at the Tinley Park Convention Center.
Nice.
It's a live broadcast from 3 to 5:30. And then from 5:30 to 6:30, a special in-person only concert by the Ides of March. That's right.
Excellent.
You heard it. And all benefits, U.S. Marine Corps Reserve Toys for Tots Holiday Toy Drive. I had to read that as it was written there.
Mm-hmm. You did that very nicely.
So in order to get in, if you want details, just go to WGNradio.com. You can download an invitation, because space, we do have plenty of spaces here, because that's why we decided to do it last year. We did it up on the north side and or up in the north suburbs, and it was in a space that could not contain the number of people who showed up and the number of toys that we collected. So we add a little bit of spaces here, but if you'd like to make sure that you get in, go to WGNradio.com, and there's a download there that you can get. It's absolutely free. All we do is we ask that you bring a toy or two or 10 or 15 or whatever you want. If you cannot make it to the show, and this is going to be on the 6th of December, Friday the 6th of December, at the Tinley Park Convention Center, like I said, you can drop off toys at Apple Chevrolet, 8585 West 159th Street, because they are one of our fine sponsors here. They and Architect of Chicagoland. But stop by, and what they're doing there is they're actually displaying these toys on their showroom floor. Two Silverados. They've got a white Silverado and a red Silverado. And they're putting the all of the... They should have a silver Silverado, too. I think that would be very nice. They put the, all the toys that they're collecting, and then they're bringing those to us in Tinley Park at the convention.
And then they drive them in for the event. It's really cool to see those Silverados packed up to the limit with all the toys that are generously donated, and they show up. It's just... It's such a happy event. It's so fun.
It is. It's absolutely great. And they, I should point out, the Ides of March are going to be there. There are musical guests, and they're going to, we're going to do a full concert afterwards. I will say that it should be noted, Jim Peterick, today, this is his birthday, and he turns 25 once again.
Still 25.
I believe this may be the 40-something year that he's turning 25, but that's it. He just, he's got purple hair. It's very hard to tell how old a guy is when he's got purple hair.
It's a good age, 25.
So congratulations. Congratulations to him. He's forever young. It's really interesting to watch him on stage. So we will, for those who've attended this in the past, I know we've had people who've been to a lot of these, dozens of these throughout the years, and it is amazing. I'm always so proud of people who listen to this program. Mm-hmm. Who come out and do this, because, you know, it's one of the largest single days of collection, single space, single days of collection in the entire United States of America when we do this. Yeah. So very, very proud to be a part of that. All right. Let's check in with Lauren Lapka. What's happening on the roadways? News from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up at the top of the hour. Rick DeMaio joins us right now,
hey,
famed television meteorologist here in Chicago, and a professor. I don't have your full bio in front of me, but it says here, you're an adjunct professor at Loyola University and aviation meteorologist at Lewis University.
Yeah, it kind of works in those kind of ways, depending on whether we're talking about climate change or aviation meteorology. So I guess I'm wearing both hats. 50 today, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yes. All right, let's just start with what the weather's going to be looking like, because Rick's still very much in the game. I get a lot of data from Rick.
He's a data guy.
Whether you like it or not.
No,
right?
I get it. I'm glad. He's always like, am I sending you too much? I'm like, no, that's fine. I can always swipe right.
Well,
but
you never reply with like a thumbs up or a thank you, so I don't know if the package is being opened. Right.
The package is always being open. Don't you worry about it, Rick. So he's still in the game. So he's watching all these things. And for 2 days, Rick was sending very urgent emails to me about what this was going to look like.
He was right.
Over the next, you know, from now. And then really the rest of the story is what's going to happen in Northwest Indiana and then how cold it's going to get, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to put the word urgent on it. I hate that term when it comes to weather. I mean, it is what it is. And it's only urgent if you don't know how to deal with it the proper way. Like, I mean, how often are parents here this time of the year, mom wearing my gloves? And if you can't find yours, just take your brother's, right? That would work.
I guess it's not right. Well, everything's urgent to me. You know, the 6 o'clock, that's
that.
Urgent.
I know you.
But this is so unusual, we can call it that, for this time of the year. So that's why it's more startling than snow and cold in Chicago. Not usually a story, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting, Anna. You know, everybody talks about white Christmases, and recent years we've had green Christmases, and then we've had more white Thanksgivings, and this year we had a white Halloween. Mm-hmm. So we're going in that direction, aren't we?
Yeah, you had snow on Halloween, snow on Veterans Day. We see a trend line here.
A white Veterans Day. But yeah, from the standpoint of the trend line, it's not going in the right direction, but it's kind of interesting as well because, you know, looking back at the past few years that we've had incredibly cold outbreaks in November, it didn't really work out that the rest of the month was really super that cold, or the rest of the year, winter-wise, was that cold. It was just kind of an aberration. For instance, you go back when we're going to be getting close to the record for tomorrow, which is 8 above in 1986 in the morning and 6 above in 1986. That November turned out to be the 21st coldest. So out of like 144 years, it wasn't really like even in the top 20. And then when you go back to last year, everybody keeps forgetting already because we've had such a horrible first 11 days of the month. Last year was really, really cold and really, really snowy, just that the snow didn't come until the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So we ended up with the 14th coldest November last year. But then you look back at the high temperature that we're going to absolutely obliterate tomorrow. We'll probably get up to about 21 or 22. The coldest high temperature ever was back on, believe it or not, 1995. When we hit 28 degrees, and do you guys remember what the summer was like in 1995?
Yes.
Of course.
Historically.
Incredibly hot, yes. Incredibly humid, nearly 700 people died. And oftentimes you think, okay, hot summer, warm fall, what's it going to be like? We ended up having the fourth coldest November ever in 1995. So even though this is really, really cold, it's kind of early in the month, and we'll be in the 50s Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week, and all the snow will be gone, and people will almost forget about the fact that we've been cold and snowy. And it looks like that trend may continue for a week and a half. I know you won't. I know you won't.
All right. So Northwest Indiana, let's start with them for just a second, because it's still continuing on there, and they're going to get upwards of 9 inches, right?
Yeah, it's more so trending from Northwest Indiana to more so to North Central. I mean, Northwest Indiana is, you know, Lake County. You really got to go, like, east of, like, I-65 into, like, Chesterton, east of Porter County and those areas. That's because the wind is literally coming more so from the northwest. So this is going to be more of a North Central Indiana, Southwest Lower Michigan type of event. And believe it or not, the cold air that we're getting, this is actually really beneficial to the high lake levels, because the lakes are literally about an inch or two close to where they were back in 1986. And this cold air mass, every time you get this much cold air on top of warm surface water, you evaporate a ton of moisture. So I would not be surprised by the end of the month, we could easily be down about 4 or 5 inches, which is needed, because that lake is awfully high. So anytime you get this much cold air this early in the year, you lose a lot of that lake water.
Well, here's what's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
A guy just got... There were people out there. We were reports of people out there surfing on Lake Michigan
today.
Did
you see it, Rick? Yeah. There was video circulating of two individuals who were surfing just after the snowstorm, riding the waves on Lake Michigan.
You know, they get to be on TV, and they share with all their friends, and then we talk about it on the biggest radio station in the Midwest. They did their job, right?
I think they genuinely enjoy it.
You know what's odd?
I mean, they do it all the time.
The temperature is 48 degrees.
But they got the wetsuits.
It's actually warmer in the water than it is outside.
Yeah, that's the right. That's the issue. Is it's almost perfect.
Maybe we should all be out there.
That's right. It's perfect surfing weather right now.
Get your wetsuits on.
Right, because when you go in the water, you're going to feel better about what's going on.
Probably so. I know one of the things that's interesting this time of year, it's really tough to get heavy duty snow when you're this, well, you know, when the water is that warm. The only time you can get a lot of snow downwind of the lake is when it's lake effect. And even last night into this morning, places downtown only got about a half inch to an inch.
Because it was rain first.
It was just too warm. So the system kind of underachieved a little bit, but still, nonetheless.
Don't call the storm an underachiever.
4 inches, it's still pretty good.
This is not an underachieving storm. This is like when a kid, like a rookie in a college basketball team, plays really, really, really well and wins the national championship as a rookie. That's the way I look at this, because it's very early on.
From 60 feet out.
Right. We have got six months of this crap left.
The plane going off the rim? I don't know if you did already.
We will in a second. Hold on. Let me just get, I'll get to it. Hold on. Don't get ahead of yourself. Let's talk about the plane going off the runway.
Sometimes we do. I got to pull the reins back. Next thing you know, we have 30 seconds, and everything I was prepared to talk about, we don't talk about.
Well, we do. We have a minute and a half. So tell me right now about this.
Close, right?
Tell me about the plane going off the runway. Why does one plane just go off the runway? Why would you have that as opposed to a bunch of problems? Was it because of the exact time or error?
You know what? I don't know if you got a chance to look at the email that I sent you, but if you go back and look at do the flight aware on that plane actually did a go around. He did a missed approach, so he was about to land. The pilot, mm-hmm. could have been a she. The pilot did a go around, did not like what the pilot was seeing at that point. Came back around, did a second attempt, landed. But if you look at the video, the plane didn't slide off the runway. It was only when they were going into the taxi area did they actually miss the taxiway? And I think that's when the wheel probably caught an embankment. And then obviously the tip of the wing hit. So you got to be careful when you say stuff, when people say plane slid off the runway. It really didn't. It was just that it was turning from the runway to the taxiway that it actually slid. The problem, though, is because O'Hare now is on either an east-west flow, or I should say an east flow or a west flow, that was a 350-degree wind. So the old O'Hare, they would have been landing on runway 32 left or 32 right. We don't have those runways anymore. So when you have a 350-degree wind and you're landing on runway 10 left, that's a 90-degree crosswind.
See?
You put in on top of that a snowy runway, and it's not easy for the pilot.
Rick DeMaio, you took the words right out of my mouth. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, you did it. See, you worked it out. Like it was all prepared. All right, hold on 1 second. Rick, we have a lovely party gift for you. All right, let's check in now with let me tell you what's coming up first. It's the most important thing. Coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, do not miss this. An amazing interview with these people who are helping recovering veterans using horses. Stay right here. Pro Concho with Anna DeBlanches right here at 720 WGN. It's Veterans Day, and we are proud and happy to have Megan Hill McQueenie with us, and as well as Bill Mercurio. And I'm going to reintroduce Megan. We had you in a couple of months ago as you were talking about this program that you're involved in. You're the COO, president of Bravehearts Therapeutic Riding and Educational Center up in Harvard, Illinois.
Right? That's correct, yes,
which
sir.
Just got inundated with snow, but don't worry about it. Everything's going to be just fine.
A little bit.
Yeah. And let's go back and explain a little bit of what this actually is. You're taking soldiers, Marines, airmen, naval personnel who've been in combat situations, have PTSD, or any kind of veteran that's had problems, Through the VA, right?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. They're suggesting this as a possible alternative to other therapies to work with horses. Explain why it is that's working.
That's correct. Bravehearts is a 501c3 nonprofit. We started servicing veterans in 2007. We service them every day, all year long. This year, we'll service over 1,000 individual veterans. And like you said, they come from the VA hospitals, and they also come on their own accord. Whether it's family members who bring them or they find us on their own. Some of them come from the Chicago area. Some of them come from Wisconsin. Some of them come from even other parts of the country who are in crisis mode. And it's really the people that come to Bravehearts, active duty, veterans, and we also work with vets and their families as well. But it's oftentimes people that say that nothing else worked. Traditional therapies many times work for many people, and sometimes they don't. And the horses, we find, we do what's called healing horsemanship at Bravehearts, and we use the horses to really connect with people, help them find peace and hope and purpose. The horses, we call them angels in fur. They just have a way to reach people. And people, vets with PTSD, vets with physical ailments, vets with cognitive ailments, TBIs, military sexual trauma, substance abuse, depression, anxiety, whatnot. It doesn't matter. Horses are able to reach people. And I've seen it time and time again that they can reach people like nothing else can. And they are such a unique animal in what they do. And whether it's quieting somebody's anxiety by working with someone in the round pen, whether it's working with somebody that's dealing with a traumatic brain injury and how the horse helps with balance and core and endurance and stability, mm-hmm. whether it's working with a veteran who's dealing with military sexual trauma or substance abuse, just even getting them to the barn, getting them out in the community.
The trust issue, which is core.
The trust is huge with the horses.
So the veterans come, no questions asked, as
no cost.
The veteran.
That's right.
How many of them, Megan, have, in generally speaking, have had experience with horses already, and how many are just kind of totally new to this whole thing?
I would take a guess. We've never actually measured that, but I would say probably a large amount. I'd say probably 75% come and have had no experience with horses. And some have small percentage have a lot of experience, and it doesn't matter. We don't have at Bravehearts, we don't have a set curriculum that we put each person through. It's not, you're going to groom
on day one, and you're going to learn how to tack up a horse on week two, and you're going to learn how to ride on week three. It's really based on each person and their individual needs. We have a dozen plus programs.
And do people stay with you throughout this, or they come and go? How does that work?
Typically, they come and go, but we do have retreats throughout the year. And so we have houses at the farms, and so we oftentimes throughout the year do intensive retreats, and those are geared. We might have a retreat that's geared specifically towards Vietnam veterans and men that are having similar common issues that they're working with. We might have a group of women that are dealing with some MST. It just depends, but we have about anywhere between 6 to 8 retreats a year where they do spend the night and stay multiple days at the farm. But for the most part, a lot of our groups and individuals are coming out and they're spending a couple hours to a half day with us.
And Bill Mercurio is a Vietnam veteran.
Yes, sir.
Right. And when did you get involved in this?
I got involved about 3 years ago. We went to a Colin Powell event in Rockford, Illinois, mm-hmm. and veterans came free, so the whole place was full of veterans. There was a table there that Megan and another young man named Cowboy were giving out information regarding Bravehearts. My wife, who has been an equine believer for years, who had her own horse when she was younger, found out that if we went out to the farm, she could ride. And as a Chicago boy, I'd never ridden. All I ever rode was the L. You know? Ultimately, I thought, okay, if I go out there, I'll be able to let her ride, and that'll be fine.
Hold on 1 second. I want to hear your story of how you went through this entire emotional journey on the other side of this, okay. And how people also tell people how they can get involved. Because this is really, you know, of all the different services that we talk about and all the different charities that we talk about on this program, this one really touches me in a very, very different way, because I've seen how it's touched so many other people in a way. And we'll come back. We'll talk to Megan and to Bill. Bravehearts Therapeutic Riding and Education Center in Harvard, Illinois, is what we're talking about on Veterans Day. Let's check in now with Lauren Lapka with the weather and the traffic.
Street justice, how it adds to Chicago's body count. Ben Bradley reports, getting away with murder. It's a WGN-TV investigative report. It is tomorrow night at 9 o'clock.
Talking to Megan Hill McQueenie. She is the president of Bravehearts Therapeutic Riding and Educational Center. And Bill Mercurio, who is a Vietnam War veteran, mm-hmm. who's been serviced by this particular organization. And we talked a couple of months ago. This is a really amazing program for veterans. You're here in Harvard, Illinois, right? Are there other programs?
We have a farm in Harvard, and then we also have one in Poplar Grove. We actually have two site locations that operate year-round.
And year-round. I mean, that's a special thing to be on the horses in the middle of the winter,
that's
too.
That's right. And we're known as being the nation's largest program that's servicing veterans with horses.
Do people come from far outside of the Chicago area?
Absolutely.
Everywhere.
They find us from all across the country.
And if you didn't hear us before or you're just joining us now, the whole idea here is you're servicing veterans who, through any level of trauma. And sometimes the trauma might not be directly related to their military service. It might be related to, say, like in Bill's case, the trauma is a little bit later in life. Although anybody who has been in combat, you know, there's a lot of things that come back from that. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your story, Bill. So you're a Vietnam veteran. You served in 66 and 67 at Pleiku, came back, lived here in Chicago, and then you had a personal tragedy, within the last decade, right?
Yes, sir. My wife and I, as I said, got involved with Bravehearts, and we spent some time out there and enjoyed it. We volunteered, and we became part of the Bravehearts group more than just a casual thing. We spent time out there. We mm-hmm. would come out together, and I really found it wonderful for me, because I tend to be a bit of an A-type personality, and when I was done with the day, I would drive out, spend time with the horses, groom them, lead other people and their horses, and spend time just talking to the horses and getting the calm that they provide for us. I was really surprised. I never realized horses were quite
They'll do it to you in A-type personality, too. You walk in there, and you think you're going to go, all right, it's like a dog. A dog is going to go, okay, yeah, all right, I got it. Horses have, I think in part because of their size and their psychological makeup, and they, it's almost as though when you look in their eyes, it's like they know something you don't know,
mm-hmm.
right? Isn't that sort of the sense that you get?
Absolutely. They have a sense about them. I knew when I came in, if I was wound up from the day, it was going to be a little difficult trying to get together with the horse to kind of have a union. So it was important for me to learn to calm myself down, take a deep breath, relax. And as soon as that happened, you saw the transition in the horse as well. They can sync their heartbeat to yours.
Oh, wow.
So as you calm down, the horse becomes calmer.
Mm-hmm.
Horse is much more attuned to who you are. And it becomes a synergy that's really impressive. In answer to your question, 2 years ago, I lost my son to the opioid epidemic. And that was, of all the things in my life, the most traumatic experience. My wife and I, my wife especially, found him in his room. He was coming out to ride with us that morning. So we went to get him, and she found that he had passed away, which immediately triggered PTSD in her. And certainly for both of us, it was a heart-rending experience that I would actually never want anyone else to experience. However, with that situation, my wife and I spent 4 months solid. I left my business, my job, and we were there every day. And
with the horses.
And the horses were literally, I was at the brink where I can tell you categorically that I would not be here today had we not had the opportunity and provided to us by Megan and all the wonderful staff out at Bravehearts who came to us literally like a family. It was overwhelming how wonderful they were to us. But the real saving grace was to be with the horses. And there was a great horse we talk about named Boone, who is just rock solid. He's a great horse. I was provided the opportunity to ride him for quite some time, and it helped me kind of understand how to ride. He's not a horse that would give you anything. You had to kind of
get it out of him.
Oh yeah, you had to do it right, or it wasn't going to happen.
and I know people like that.
and to that end, he was really beneficial for me when I was out there. Nancy and I.
And how's she doing now? How's your wife doing?
She's doing fine. My wife is an exercise rider. She's out there a lot. She again, you know, these things kind of they come in unexpected moments, and that trauma sneaks up on you. And whenever we're out at the farm, we're provided the opportunity to just be in the moment, you know. So yesterday or tomorrow doesn't really exist, you know. You have to be with the horse, so it's a very calming effect. I was also motivated to become an instructor. And
you've never been on a horse before,
no.
Getting involved with Bravehearts.
No, I've never been on a horse.
And how long have you been involved?
About 3 years now.
Three years. You've worked your way up to instructor. And,
yes.
Yeah.
And I'm an instructor now, and I have the opportunity to work with a group of veterans from Rosecrans. It's a revolving group. They come to be with us on my teaching days on Friday. And there's quite a bit of substance abuse involved, and people from various situations they're dealing with. And I've had the opportunity to work with them and see the changes, you know, that come about because they're on the horse. I mean, fellows come in and they have, you know, they're reluctant to be around the horse. They're not sure. They're having
very intimidating. Can be, right?
Yeah, it's a big animal. I mean, So we get them together with the animals, and we've had some success, actually a lot of success with, after these particular individuals are in the program and they are finished with their program, they've succeeded in their process, their 30-day rehab. They come out on their own because they are veterans, and they're able to come out and be provided the services that we offer for free. So to see them come after their return, they're on their own. Yeah. They're functioning individuals, and they come out, and I can see the progress that they made through the horses, and that in and of itself is satisfying for me because it's kind of a way for me to give a little bit more out of my son.
Mm-hmm. It's amazingly brave of you to tell that story the way you just did. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. And it's it really is a testament to what goes on here, though. And this is a program that probably should get replicated in a lot of different ways, Megan.
You know, we are accredited through an organization called PATH, and that is our accrediting body. And there are about 300 other centers that are somewhat like Bravehearts that are across the country. We're a little bit unique in our model, A, because we've been doing it so long. So we've gotten really good at just trying to follow what the veteran needs, not telling them what they need, mm-hmm. but hearing what they want and then responding to that call. And that's really what we work on at Bravehearts, is really teaching horsemanship and letting the horses do the work. I mean, like you all discussed, they're brilliant at reading intention. They know us better than we know ourselves. And when you take the time to stay present with them, you can learn a whole lot about who you are and working even, you know, harder at who you want to be.
I want to talk a little bit about when you were here before.
Mm-hmm.
You were doing these rides mm-hmm. throughout cities mm-hmm. where you were going to major cities here, obviously included, and you were bringing the horses and the veterans, and you were parading through, and that was, how many miles per city did
20
you do?
20 miles.
20 miles in each city.
Yes, sir.
And Bill was a part of that. How did that go?
It went great. And that concept, it's a program that's called Trail to Zero, and it's all set up through Bravehearts. And that whole concept is that, you know, we lose 20 veterans a day in this country, whatever statistic you want to look at. If it's 20, 22, regardless, it's unacceptable. It's an epidemic in our country.
We lose them to suicide.
We're losing veterans to suicide mm-hmm. in the United States. And, you know, if that was 20 senators or 20 NFL players, it'd be on the front page of every paper every day. And it's not. And we need to get more awareness pointed to it. We need to let veterans know that there's programs like ours that are out there. There's innovative, unique, alternative programs like horses. And I know personally that I can't even tell you how many times I've heard a veteran, tell me that a horse not just changed their life, but saved their life. And I think that's a mission that we want to tell at Bravehearts. And so the concept of Trail to Zero is that we want to ride horses for 20 miles in honor of the people that we've lost, but reaching people that are struggling and hurting and letting them know that horses and programs like Bravehearts exist. And we've done the ride now in Washington, D.C. We've done it in New York City. We've done it in Chicago. And in 2020, we're hoping to do it in more cities, major cities. And again, it's 20 miles. It's all with veterans, and it's with these horses, and they've worked with these horses and helped train these horses and work so hard to get where they have and bravely just want to help serve their peers and save their peers.
I know a question a lot of people have is, are the horses specially trained to do this?
Our horses are therapy horses. They're exceptional at their job, and they are extraordinary, and they're very, very, very special animals. You know, they really, at Bravehearts, they're like celebrities, and rightfully so, because they have big jobs in front of them, you know, and they get treated like it. You know, there was actually a recent study I just read about that talks about how therapy animals can't do their jobs at their peak unless they have the highest care. And we really try to make sure that our horses have that so they can do what they need to do. It's a heavy job to be a therapy horse, and our horses are exceptional. We have about 44 horses at Bravehearts, and they can serve any veteran from a very beginner, more timid, to an extremely advanced rider.
And I'm assuming you match that horse
and
with the temperament.
Absolutely.
Temperament of the horse with the temperament of the human.
It's
amazing because, and again, I look at this as a very equal relationship between horses and humans, you know, throughout history, right, throughout human history, and having been around horses my whole life and been around race horses, which are totally, you know, different breed, but people always ask, you know, do they know if they win or they know what they're doing? And absolutely. Mm-hmm. They know so many things about everything, and they watch the people around them, and they communicate with each other in their own ways too. Bravehearts, if you would like to get involved, braveheartsriding.org. Braveheartsriding.org. Thank you both so much for being here, Megan and Bill.
And just want to add one thing. If there's a veteran you know out there that's struggling, that needs help, that's what we hope this message is all about today. Just pick up the phone, Google us, find us, and we'll be glad to help them out.
Thanks, Megan. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
I'm still moved by what we just heard from our veteran and the Bravehearts riding program. Really amazing.
Yeah.
To see the work that they're doing. And I mean, boy, meeting someone like Megan, sure, her heart is in it 3,000%. And the people she's helping, it's just a wonderful story. Really moved me.
If you want to get involved, and if you're just joining us, that was it is an organization that uses therapy horses to deal with veterans who are dealing with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And drug abuse and other things that have crept up in their lives. This program is specifically for veterans, and veterans get it for free.
And a family member gets to come with them. So you just heard from our veteran, Bill, who talked to us about how his wife joined because they both were dealing with a very similar traumatic experience, the death of their son. And so they rode together.
Right. So that is it's a great organization. And as we sit here and today, at the end of this day, and we honor the veterans who've served this country so well, and I think there's a special emphasis these last couple of years, obviously, because the United States, for the best part of the 21st century, for the most part of the 21st century, mm-hmm. almost all of it, has been in conflict somewhere around the world. Okay. And it's a time to remember that, you know, we have as many people as, you know, there's 500,000 active duty service personnel that are deployed here domestically and around the world. So it's a time to remember that, and remember that, you know, as you're rolling out a certain percentage of those every year, you know, you do, that means that there's a lot of people here who have served, been in uniform. We have a number of people here, including our own Brian Altimer, mm-hmm. who was a United States Marine for a number of years in the early 2000s. So
my nephew is in Afghanistan right now as part of the Illinois National Guard deployment recently. So you think about them at this time, you think about all of our veterans and the kinds of programs that can help. One of the things about this Bravehearts that I thought was very interesting is that this is where a lot of vets go when nothing else seems to work. The other programs that seem to be okay for others, it hasn't worked for them, so they turn here.
There is something about a horse.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly how it works. It's one of the great mysteries, I think, of the human experience. Where, you know, humans and horses have teamed up the same in a lot of the ways that the dogs and the humans have teamed up, but for different purposes, obviously for transportation.
Different trust, though, with a horse when you have to ride that horse. There's a connection between the two of you. You're in it together, right? Whatever happens, happens together, and you get that read on each other. And until you're comfortable, the horse isn't comfortable, and vice versa.
You tell the dog what to do, and
the dog usually listens.
Like 80% of the time, the dog will listen to what you tell it to do. Depending on the dog,
I love dogs.
I've had dogs that are more in the 20% category.
Mine's sort of in the 20% right now, but she's still young.
Yeah, but as they get older, they get to about 80%, and they and they're amazing, amazing, amazing companions. However, a horse is a different deal because, as you point out, they're equal partners in whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You got to trust them; they got to trust you. And if they don't trust you, I don't know if you've ever seen this. It was 60 Minutes last weekend, not this weekend. They did an amazing story about these guys who are bronco busters. You know, like they're in the professional rodeo circuit. It's an entire family of people who are, you know, the best at riding the bucking bronco.
Yeah.
And that's a case where they're just showing you what can go wrong when you're trying to get along with a horse, when you're trying to figure out exactly how to make that relationship go. I mean, think about that. There's an entire sport. We don't have a sport where people get mauled by dogs, right? You know, it's not when something goes wrong there. This is a really, really, really unique circumstance.
It is. Yeah.
It is very special. Again, at braveheartsriding.org, braveheartsriding, R-I-D-I-N-G, braveheartsriding.org, if you'd like to get involved.
Or if you know someone who would like to take part in their services, too. That's what they want to reach out to you, too.
Right. Absolutely free to veterans.
No questions asked, and a family member can join you.
Yes. So that is that's a great thing. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to the guys from the newest member of the NBC Sports Chicago's Blackhawks coverage team. You guys had him on,
Nick Gismondi,
during the
he's our new friend
opener that I couldn't attend, and I have some thoughts. I'm trying to come up with anything that makes me feel better about this sporting year. Right. If you look at the Chicago sports scene, it's gotten a little dry over the last couple of years. You know, the Hawks were the last to get us to where we wanted to go. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that, well, actually, no, the Cubs were, I guess, because 2015 was the last. Right. For the Hawks. And mm-hmm. then the Cubs in 2016. And, you know, it's been a little bit of a rough run. It's not been so easy. So we'll figure out if maybe there's a turn here. I'm hoping there's a turn because I know the Bears that didn't do it for me. But first, let's talk to Lauren Lapka about what's happening in the skies and on the roads. We got news coming with Jordan coming your way at 7 o'clock.
Top of the
Kevin
hour.
Kevin just came running in here.
I know, like there was this and, just in yeah. something. Like,
oh, I just
news.
Wanted to make sure I was here for the segment on time.
Okay. All right.
I was fine. Worried.
Thank you, Kevin. Anyway, the point is, I was just saying, Jordan's going to be in the newsroom. The Northwestern Medicine newsroom. That's what I wanted to say.
Got it out.
Don't do that, Kevin. You can't.
Oh, did I scare you when I came in?
It looked like there was some breaking news about the Bears or something. We were concerned.
No Danny Trevathan news yet, Ro. Every break, bro, I was like, wait, did you say
how
Danny Trevathan's
Danny?
Name?
What happened? Very concerned about Danny Trevathan.
Worried about him. Trevathan. He's really. the leader of the team.
Yeah. Trevathan.
I think there's an extra vowel in
Trevathan.
There.
That's what isn't.
That's how OB calls
OB.
It.
Yeah, OB Trevathan. Calls him Trevathan. It's good
he can
enough
do that.
For me.
That's he fine. Can do that.
Hey, what am I supposed to? What am I going to tell him? He's wrong.
No. I would not advise that.
Nick Gismondi is joining us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline, and he's the newest member of the Blackhawks coverage team. He's a ringside reporter for NBC Sports Chicago. And Nick, is this the turnaround moment that we have all been waiting for since they scored 4 goals in the first period last night? Just say yes and hang up.
Yeah, that's it. And great talking to you guys. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Hey, stick around for just a few more minutes.
Deal.
Got to meet you out there, and it was fun for the Hawks home opener, and it just looks like you're having a great time doing what you're doing. How's it been?
I am having the greatest time. It's funny, I can't quite put it into words even still yet. I sort of knew when I got the chance to sit down with you guys what was coming that night, and from then on, it's been fantastic. You know, I know I said it then, but I echo the same things. And it's a first-class organization. The guys in the room are great. Coach is great. The communications team is just through the roof quality people. And you know, it's rare air for me to be able to be a part of such a legendary organization. I mean, from the
Nick.
Yeah.
You're mispronouncing that. It's organization.
Organization. I can go Canadian on that.
Yeah. I just got to say, that's. I mean,
do you speak Canadian yet?
Mm-hmm. Or hockey? You know what? It's not hockey.
Close enough to Canada.
Hockey and Canadian are very similar dialects, but the hockey dialect is very specific. It of course has a Canadian lilt, but there are certain words which are pronounced differently in hockey than they are in either American English or Canadian English. Does not matter.
Just the way it is. Yeah. Just.
Yeah. Two big ones. You got organization and you got process. Part of the process.
The process. Yeah. And you also, you know what else? You never go to the stadium, do you? No. You go to the building.
You go to the building. I still say rink. I say rink a lot. I said rink as a kid, so I'm like, I'm heading over to like if I'm on the phone with somebody, I'm like, I gotta go, I'm heading into the rink right now. And it's the United Center, but it's like one of the greatest buildings in all sports.
You got it right there. That was correct.
Nick, it does feel like they're kind of turning a corner here. What have you seen over the past few games? 5 points over the last 3 games.
Yeah, listen, I've been real positive about these guys from the start. I mean, on paper and what they have in the room, it's a very, very good hockey team from top to bottom. They've got depth scores through 4 lines. I think what they have and what they've built defensively is fantastic. And obviously, you know, they're going to be getting Connor Murphy back here shortly as well off the long-term IR. And then you've got two of the best goaltenders in the game in between the pipes. So you basically got two starters as your backstop. And as you saw last night, pulled his weight with 53 saves. But this is a very good hockey team. And I think what you had and what the difference was is there's some new guys in the room. There's a coach who's implementing a new system. You've got all of these different things sort of coming into play, and you've got guys that have to get used to playing with one another. You have to have a camaraderie there that it takes a minute to build, and it doesn't just happen in training camp. The same with implementing systems and being comfortable playing with one another. So, you know, the guys have a feeling out process, so does coach, and now what you're seeing a few games into the season is that they've identified that. This is a good hockey team that is beating some very good clubs right now. I mean, that was a highly offensively potent Toronto Maple Leafs team last night that they outpaced offensively. They did the same against Vancouver. They should have beat a very talented Pittsburgh Penguins team as well. So everything that you're seeing right now is what everybody expected the Blackhawks to be at the start of the season, but at the end of the day, we forget quickly that these guys are human beings and doesn't just snap into place right away.
How great is Robin Leonard? You mentioned the 53 saves the other night. Look, he faced 57 shots. That's way too many. So don't look at the four goals. But 53 stops, that ties a career high. I mean, you could probably make the argument he's the MVP of the Blackhawks so far this season.
Well, I would make that argument for a couple of reasons. I think obviously is, you know, it's a tandem in goal. I mean, I think Corey Crawford has faced some and had some incredible games too, some high shot games. But I would say the goaltending team is what has kept these guys in the fight while they kind of figured out the offense a little bit. And now that that's coming, you know, it's all the pieces sort of falling into place. But I think in addition to Robin Leonard being so great in between the pipes, he's a big voice in the locker room. He's an honest guy. He's not going to pull any punches. So everybody's seen how vocal he is with the media and how honest he is with the media. I would imagine that behind closed doors and to the room and what he's saying to the boys between periods or before and after games is also very vocal and very honest. And when you have a guy that's throwing up 53 saves in a night, you're going to listen to him when he speaks. So I think, you know, part of this team being successful right now has a lot to do with that room being very good. And I said it the other day too, and this is, I got some laughs when I brought this up, but hockey's about having a good time. And whether you're playing as a 13-year-old or an 8-year-old or in a hockey rink or on a pond in your backyard or in the United Center, you have to have fun. And for a little bit of time there, those guys, they weren't having much fun. And obviously, you know, not winning games and not scoring goals isn't much fun, but you have to try to find ways to manufacture that even when you're kind of down a little bit. And we've seen that over the last few games too. Practices are lighter. Guys are cheerier and they're having fun again. And that translates onto the ice.
Nick, are you equally impressed with our baby Hawks, you know, with Kirby Doc and Boqvist? They are impressing me so far with just the few games they've played.
And I'm a big fan of Kirby Doc's and a big fan of Boqvist, too. I mean, you're looking at the future core of the Chicago Blackhawks grow up right in front of your eyes. Kirby Doc is incredibly well-spoken. He's mature, and not only is he incredibly talented, but I think a big thing that gets overlooked sometimes is how coachable are you? You know, he was obviously a very talented player in juniors, and now he's an 18-year-old kid in the NHL holding his own, and it's because he's coachable. He's willing to listen. He's not set in his ways. He understands that there's a lot of growth and a lot of things that he can learn. So, you know, from face-offs to his responsibility without the puck, I think Kirby Doc's upside is fantastic, and he's contributing now, you know, and that's a very positive thing for this team. And then and Boqvist, he's just getting comfortable. Obviously, he's been here a little bit less time and a little fewer reps than Doc has got. But again, you just see him really fitting in. And I want to go back to the leadership on this team and that room. Those guys feel comfortable because that room puts their arm around you, brings you in, and allows you to play your game.
How about the captain dropping the gloves last night? Not messing around.
Wow. Like 30 seconds in.
It's huge. You know,
go ahead.
that's a guy I would follow into war. I mean, he's got such an incredible demeanor. Your captain drops the mitt like that. He's got the whole bench going. I mean, you're looking at each other on that bench, and you're like, let's go. Like, all right, let's go. If Taser's dropping the gloves, then it's time to get her going, and clearly they responded.
Yeah, you know, it's one thing for Shaw to drop the gloves, because, you know, we're used to that. You know, that's kind of just...
That happens.
That's like, you know, breathing for us. But I do like... I think it's interesting, and I don't know where Colleton is on this, where the coach is on this, but it does seem like there's more of that sort of old school, you know, brawling 70s, 80s style hockey that I'm seeing out of this team than you've seen certainly in the Quenneville years, because Quenneville years were really sort of about the European style and about speed and precision. And what they learned was that the change here in the 2010s, 2010s, this decade that's about to end, is that old school, you know, big body on body hockey's back.
Well, I think that there's a time and a place for it, right? Like, you're not going to see Jonathan Toews drop the gloves every couple games. That was a leadership move he did yesterday, and he stuck up for his teammates, which I think is huge. But what you are going to see is contact. But I think preaching the right kind of contact is huge. You do see the big hits, but the game has changed a little bit, and it's evolving even from the youth level now up into this, where you want that body contact, but the body contact has changed a little bit. It used to be super bombastic, and you wanted those major hits, and it didn't matter what happened at the end of it. Well, now you're making body contact to gain a position or to separate players from the puck. So you'll see guys coming in a little bit more towards the hands. You know, you're checking more towards the hands, shoulder down, and you're trying to take away the stick, and you're trying to get in front of them so that you angle the guy into the boards a little bit more so that, A, yeah, you want to blow him up and knock him down, but B, yeah, you also don't want to do it in such a way in which you've now put yourself at a disadvantage and you're on the ground scrambling to get back up. So
Nick, thanks.
Guys are hitting harder and better.
Nick, thanks very much. Nick Gismondi, NBC Sports. We've got the
Bye, guys.
News coming your way in 2 minutes.